Good evening and welcome to the February 18th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session and discussed a couple of employee action issues and no action was taken. Do we have consensus on the order of business?
No.
Good. Okay. Item 4.03 is our approval of minutes from the meeting of February 4, 2020. Are there any revisions, comments? If not, then I would seek approval of those minutes, please.
I'll move approval of the minutes of February 7th.
February 4th.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries 7-0. And next, we have one representative to the board tonight who we'd like to hear from. And yeah, and tell me your name and where you're from.
Hi, I'm Bailey Frost. I'm the student representative tonight for SLO High. I'm the vice president of
the school. Thank you for coming all the way up here, out here.
So yeah, thank you for having me.
Okay, let's hear your report.
Okay, so last weekend, ASB held our sixth annual Sweethearts Dance, where we had a turnout of over 150 students at local elementary schools come with their parents, which was super awesome to see. In terms of sports, obviously we're getting into CIF this time of the year, so we had our boys and girls soccer team both win league championship. Unfortunately, they were knocked out first round of CIF, but we do have our boys and girls basketball teams both going into CIF this week. This week we also have our FFA week, where they are promoting Ag Awareness Daily. They are also holding several chapter meetings, and the fan favorite, they are having the on-campus petting zoo, which is super exciting. big news, our SLO High mock trial just got the county, won the countywide competition, and they are currently moving on to state, which is super exciting for
our
high school. And that's all we have for SLO High.
Thank you so much. As usual, a lot going on. Thank you for coming. We understand that you have things to do and places to go and homework to do, I'm sure. So if you need to move on, feel free. If you'd like to stay, feel free. Mr. Millar.
I just want to make sure people understand what an achievement that was for SLO High mock trial team, because there's been some juggernauts in this county in mock trial for some time. So well done. Congratulations to the team.
Good job. Thank you. Thanks a lot. All right. Tonight, we're happy to welcome Monarch Grove. And Mr. Mayfield, just before you start, I just wanted to let people know, if you're here to take photos or video of your students, feel free to come stand back here and we'll do our best to stay out of your way. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, Principal Laura Storm is here with the Junior Lighthouse team to let us know about an exciting new chapter in Monarch Grove.
Well, good evening. Thank you so much for having us. These students are members of our Junior Lighthouse team. I will let them introduce themselves when they get to their section, if you will. And they're going to talk a little bit about Leader in Me and Junior Lighthouse and what they have already done. I think you'll be really impressed.
Thank you.
Take it away, you guys.
Good evening. My name is Mia, and I'm on the Junior Lighthouse team. This is Autumn, Blake, Julia, Joshua, Logan, and Anna. Why we do Leader in Me is to engage and inspire students who own their learning. Another one is for students to empower to lead themselves and others, to show ownership of their school and community, soft skills needed for college, career, and life. The top 10 skills needed today: complex problem-solving skills, critical thinking, creativity, People management. Coordinating with others, we think, is one of the most important, because if you don't have a good team, then you won't work good together. Emotional intelligence, judgment and decision making, we also think is very important, because if you don't get one of the things for Junior Lighthouse is the main idea is one that the students get a voice and giving their own judgment for their own future. Another one is service orientation, and then negotiation and convictive flexibility.
Mrs. Storm, teachers, parents, and students visited a school site in Ventura, California to see Leader in Me in action. Monarch Grove received a $10,000 grant to launch the Leader in Me program from the San Luis Coastal Education Foundation. We also won an additional $5,000 People's Choice Prize with the help of community voting. Monarch Grove officially launched the Leader in Me school-wide in January.
What is Leader in Me? This is a great question. In Leader in Me, everyone gets to learn how to be a leader. Also, you can develop social emotional learning for all. Also, you can learn to set goals and monitor progress. For example, in my class, we set goals and got a partner, and then we at the end of the week, we met with our partner and talked about how far we got on our goal. Also, there's a class room and school-wide leadership roles. This means that every kid, third through fifth grade, has a leadership role, and they get to help the school by doing something. And here are some of the seven habits. The first one is be proactive. And the second one is begin with the end in mind. The third is put first things first, and then think win-win. Seek first to be understood, then to understand, then to be understood. And six is synthesize, and lastly is sharpen the saw.
A big part of the Leader in Me program includes a student leadership team. We are a team of 4 fourth grade and 4 fifth grade students. We all applied and interviewed with a panel of 4 adults. We meet weekly to brainstorm, create, plan, design, problem solve, and run school improvement projects and community service projects. We are all role models for other students. We had a food drive for the We Got Your Back program, which includes volunteers for stuffing backpacks with food items for Monarch Grove families.
We created leadership roles based on Monarch Grove needs. Shorted the leadership roles into action teams, and based additional students to serve in advanced leadership roles to help launch the program. We had a job fair for people to sign up for the for their top 5 jobs that they wanted. And then we had questions for the advanced and junior lighthouse team to ask for, like, encourage them to what they want. And then we had an assembly for people to see their group. They got lanyards and they learned a handshake and chant, and they presented that to the rest of the groups.
We hope to accomplish a lot more before the end of the school year. Some of our ideas include toy and clothing drives for our local community. beach cleanups, and sending donations overseas to our military. We hope to make a big difference at our school and beyond.
So the benefits we have served on our Junior Lighthouse team. We've learned that there is a leader in all of us, not just adults. We've shown passion and confidence to other students. We've practiced taking the initiative and leading in our classrooms and at home. We will continue to encourage other students to see the leader in themselves.
Thank you for listening.
Mrs. Storm, on behalf of the school board and my staff, we'd like to acknowledge you for this certificate of appreciation for your students who are diving into becoming great leaders in your school and across our community. So congratulations. Hopefully you can find a space on your wall for this.
Thank you so much for coming. Thank you. All right, next is item 5.03, and that is a Measure D Citizens Bond Oversight Committee report. Is Mr. Sanfilippo here? Oh, there you are, Ken. Thanks for coming.
I'm hiding. Hi, everyone. As you know, I'm the chairperson for the Citizens Bond Oversight Committee. And I really want to, before I start my report here, I really want to thank the support staff and management, along with the team members. It's just been a cohesive group, and we've met on a quarterly basis, and they've come prepared. Management and support staff has come prepared on reports that we need, so it's made our jobs easier. You have the tough work. You have to approve all those bonds and do all the construction stuff and oversight and so on. We just get to look at kind of the end products here. So anyway, the Citizens Oversight Committee, like I said, has met periodically over the year. And we review the financial expenditures, Measure D proceeds, reviewed all the actions related to the compliance, mainly with Ed Code 15278 for our citizens. And basically, we looked at these reports through the fiscal year, which was 2018-2019. Along with that, as you know, all three series of the Measure D series bonds of the $177 million have been released, and proceeds have been spent on throughout the district. Most of those funds are the two comprehensive of high schools, but as you know, we have in my report, you'll see all the other parts that where these funds were used, anywhere from Baywood Elementary to Bellevue Santa Fe Elementary School, Bishop's Peak, Del Mar, Hawthorne, C.L. Smith, district-wide projects, Los Osos Middle School. I'm not going to go in detail what they were, but Morro Bay, of course, Morro Bay Elementary, Pacheco, San Luis High, and, of course, Pacific Beach High School. And I also want to let the board know that we're transparent. Our minutes and agendas are posted. Our information is out to the public. Public comment is always welcome. And I think being transparent, and as you've been worked very hard to do, and as we do in our committee, is very important to our community. They have questions or concerns, they can address those, they'll be answered. And so it's been just a successful year, and it's been a successful year seeing all the improvements. So thank you. Step down, I did about 7 years ago, yeah. Okay. After a 40-year history, yeah.
We were talking about the stool, Ken.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Okay.
So I just personally want to thank you for all the work. I know this is an extremely important committee because you basically are the eyes behind making sure everything's okay, and I know it's all volunteer. When I was reading this, I was kind of struck by, well, where's the Morro Bay swimming pool? Where's the sand? Some of that stuff. Is that because of the year?
Yes.
Okay.
I would answer it that way.
You would answer it that
Someone
way.
Else can help me out there. Ryan, is that true? Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's 2018-19 is what we looked at here.
Just the 1 year.
Yeah. Okay. That window.
Thank you very much.
Okay. But good question.
And Ken, thank you very much for the work. I know that this committee takes its charge very seriously, and we take your reports very seriously.
So. Yeah, in addition, we also have done walking tours, so mm-hmm. not only we're looking at the paperwork and the information that we receive, we're actually going out on sites.
That's
so
great.
With the construction, the major high school construction anyway, not all the other elementary right. stuff, but so I'm happy with the team and happy with how everything's been going. So
good.
Appreciate
and thank
that.
You for your leadership on the team. Thanks
thank
a
you.
Lot.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ken.
You bet.
Okay, our next item is 6.01, and that's correspondence. And as of the time of that the agenda was published, we had received email from Tawny Day Stereos and from Catherine Bumpus, both with regard to the sustainability plan, and an email from Jennifer Bauer providing us with a Washington Post article on climate action. So next, our next item is public comment. This is for items not on the agenda, or if the items are on the agenda, but you prefer to address them now rather than wait until the agenda item comes up. We would request that you complete a yellow sheet there on the table in the back and give that to Ms. Dawson, who will make sure that we receive it over here. For each speaker, we'll have 3 minutes. We monitor it closely. We don't allow you to give time away or to share time. You'll have 3 minutes in which to address the board. Is anyone here wishing to speak a public comment at this time? I know we have several yellow sheets, but we'll presume then that you will wait until the item arises on the agenda. Okay, thank you. Next are superintendent's updates, and we start with business and budget.
Yeah, so just a quick update. I actually had the honor of attending a retired active men's group meeting today in San Luis Obispo, although I'm not retired at this time. So I had no idea that this group was established, but it's a large group. They actually have one in Morro Bay as well as in Oro Grande. And really a great group of gentlemen in this case for this group. And so the topic of discussion was some confusion about Prop 13. Of course, right?
Yes.
The tax initiative
yeah.
back in the 70s versus now the Prop 13 on the ballot. So I kind of discussed that with them, the differences, you know, what's potentially coming up in November ballot in terms of the tax initiative. And then I was able to share a lot about our Measure D progress through that and talked a little bit about them, about basic aid status for the district as well as budgets and retirement costs and those types of things and kind of some of the, you know, the tough things that are happening across the state in terms of budgets for school districts. So I think it was very valuable for me to talk to that group and kind of, you know, share the realities of what's important, what's not, and kind of where we're at as a school district and just make sure that they were informed of it. And they were very thankful that I was able to attend and share that information with them. So it went really well.
Great. Thank you. Hope they then spread the word to alleviate additional confusion within the community. All right, next, educational services update. Ms. McGrath.
Thank you. Wanted to say thank you for approving our ARES contract. So as you have heard previously, we will be going to a new student information system, which will be a big initiative for our school district. We have used PowerSchool for a long time, and our new system is called ARES. That will officially begin in the fall. But because of you approving that, now we're able to begin kind of a training protocols and start to get people familiar with it and learn the new system. So thank you for that. Also wanted to just say again, congrats to Del Mar. Dr. Prater got to go with the Del Mar staff to celebrate their award two times to be recognized at a distinguished school. So big congrats to them, and I'm proud of that elementary school. Also, kind of kudos to Mr. Mayfield and others that helped to organize an equity parent meeting. Great opportunity to be able to kind of speak to the larger community and parents about our work around equity and our desire to make sure every single student achieves to their maximum potential. So thank you, Mr. Mayfield, for that. Also, we have our Baywood Community Forum coming up. So just wanted to remind everyone that'll be Thursday evening. Great chance to hear from representatives from the different focus groups that we've been holding, as well as the advisory committee. Lots of different groups that are focused on the different aspects of that program as we look to implement a dual immersion program for Baywood. So great opportunity. If there's any remaining questions, or if you'd like to be able to give further input or hear from some of the representatives from the different advisory groups, that's a great opportunity to do that. We also have a thought exchange out, so that's a kind of an innovative way to gather input. So just a reminder to people to utilize that link if you would like to give information but maybe are physically not able to attend. I have a few presentations tonight, so that's probably it for now. Thanks.
Thank you. Next is our Measure D update.
Yeah, so two quick things. Just I had a great meeting today with Leslie O'Connor, as well as Steve Stewart, to talk about all the moves happening in San Luis Obispo High School in the coming month and a half. So we have the new Student Support Services building opening up, which means all of the office staff is going to be moving over. The middle section of the 100 building will be vacated by spring break, which will mean some teacher moves and teachers coming up to the district office. So we're taking a few more classrooms, three more classrooms to be exact, to accommodate the construction that's happening on campus. And so just, you know, the coordination of that and the moves and make sure everything's set and teachers are, you know, without causing as little disruption as possible as we go through it, will be critical here in the next month and a half. And then talked about project timelines and where we're at. So things are coming along. The lack of rain in this case is, you know, for construction is a great thing, not great for anything else. In terms of, you know, just we need water, right? We need that rain. So, but we're, you know, they are moving along pretty quickly, and so there's going to be a pretty good grand opening, I think, here in the springtime. Hopefully, before summer break, that we can student services building, performing arts space, the gym, the pool. So that whole side of campus will be given back to the students and staff. So that'll make a big difference, as well as they'll begin work on the field section, which will our neighbors will be very happy when the dust cloud is gone on that side. Other than that, I did meet with some kids at Hawthorne Elementary School. I talked a little bit about it at the Measure D study session, and it just reemphasized how important it is for us to listen to the kids. It was great. They wrote me letters. I wrote them back. They were all, you know, one kid had a tie on and dressed up to meet me. And so Mr. Bond and myself went to Hawthorne. We walked the campus, walked the playground site. So we have a few little projects we're going to do, and they're going to assist us with, you know, kind of how they want that playground laid out as we look to slurry that over the summertime. So, yeah, excited. Right.
Thank you. Thanks. All right, next, item 8.01, district efforts to enhance conservation and sustainability practices, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so, you know, this has been a subject that's brought up to the board over the past few months. Had a group of students, community members, parents, teachers, staff coming forward to, you know, talk about climate change and the effect and bringing ideas for plans and what we should do as a district. So we actually, Mr. Buckman actually back in May had asked the district to kind of share the work of our energy consultant for the Prop 39 work that we had done. So we're finally at a point where Rebecca Gladden is here tonight, so I'm going to have her come up in a minute as we go through this presentation to kind of share some of the information that came out of that. So to kind of start us off in this presentation, and I don't want to hearken you back to a couple of years ago when the board passed a climate change resolution. So, Manny, if you go to the first slide. Actually, I guess I can use this, huh? On June 5th, 2018, the school board looked at, I believe it was a PTA resolution, right? That was kind of the focus that had come forward. Was it PTA? CSBA. Oh, this was student-driven. Okay. So maybe it was the fact that the PTA was supporting it as well on side of it that I was remembering. But these were the bullet points that were part of that climate change resolution in terms of things that the board said, hey, we should be focused on these things. This is what we should be working on. So you'll see they are continued assurance that new buildings and modernization of existing buildings use environmentally sensitive building materials as well as efficient use of energy, water, and other resources whenever possible. Support collaboration efforts with cities and outside agencies to create safe routes to bike and walk to school. Support piloting exemplar programs at the elementary, middle, and high school level for recycling, composting programs, and encourage all schools within the district to participate. Continued evaluation of sustainability improvement efforts for the school lunch program. Examples, more locally sourced or organic foods, more vegetarian options, less processed packaged foods. Endeavor to create and maintain school gardens as hands-on learning experiences that promote good nutrition and stewardship of the land, and integration of studying climate change into the next generation science standards and state-adopted curriculum. So that's what the board had kind of focused on at that point in terms of moving forward. So, you know, with this, you know, kind of people coming forward, we wanted to, hey, what have we done since this resolution has come up? And, again, more to do, but kind of what are the things that we've done over the past couple of years that we can focus on? And so I am going to have Rebecca come up now and talk a little bit about our Prop 39 funds as well as some of the utility energy audit information. So she has a presentation that I'm going to embed into my overall presentation about climate change. So Rebecca, come on up. Mandy, if you'll click on that for me.
Taking over?
It's all yours.
All right. Good evening. Thank you for having me today. And pleasure speaking with you all. I'm Rebecca Gladden from SiteLogic, formerly known as IES Indoor Environmental Services, and I have been helping the district with their energy conservation goals, and specifically helping wrap up all the Prop 39 reporting too. We came in. So I'm going to begin with a program overview of what we've been doing, and then go into how the district has been trending in its energy use and consumption, some opportunities that have been identified, and basically some next steps of how we're going to get to reaching our goals that we have in front of us. So to recap, basically the board began in 2018 with an energy conservation sustainability policy that they set forth in hiring my company to help as consultants and to guide you to getting to your goals. And I was also helping not only with consultation and monitoring your energy use, but helping you complete and wrap up all the Prop 39 reporting that's required with the state. So all that's completely done and taken care of. So we're really good there. We're ready to put that behind us. To recap on what projects were done with the Prop 39 funding, though, a good portion of the Los Osos Middle School Zero Net Energy project was funded by Prop 39, which was great. And we also did all the middle school gym lighting was retrofitted, changed out for more efficient LED lights. And we also did all the elementary lighting. You also did, not me, sorry. You also completed all the elementary lighting, the interior and exterior lights, making everything much more efficient with more modernized lighting technology. I've been personally working with the district on monitoring and reviewing your energy consumption to identify opportunities to reduce your utility consumption specifically, because the cost keeps going up and up every year, not only trying to help you conserve for environmental reasons, but also financial reasons. It's just something that's kind of hitting nationally across the board, so it's really good that we're working with you and starting this now, because it's a good time to start. And again, just continuing, I know my company and myself are very much looking forward to continuing the partnership with this district on further identifying opportunities going forward with projects, modifications that we can do to the operations to help you conserve.
I'm going to pop in really quick, yeah. just so that the board and the public knows. So Prop 39 was a program that when the government had surplus, our state government had surplus, Governor Brown had put forward money to basically help districts do energy efficiency projects. So we received the Prop 39 funds basically to kind of move forward. And so that these are the projects that Rebecca has been helping us oversee, because you have to monitor your current energy. You have to look at it afterwards. You have to write this whole report and audit to the state of California to show that those dollars were expended in a way that did actually help and were energy efficient. So a lot of rules and regulations, of course, when we're given funds.
Definitely. Thank you. Thank you for that. Sorry. Didn't do a recap on that. So going towards what impact did the projects make, essentially? There, we used the state money to help reduce our energy consumption. So did we actually end up doing that? The answer is yes. They all came out very good results. All the schools that were supposed to reduce in energy consumption did reduce. And you can see on the graph to the left there, I have three complete fiscal years. And the 2019-2020 fiscal year captures July to December. It's kind of a little bit delayed depending on the PG&E billing cycles. So I have the first 6 months of this fiscal year here. And that's why I broke them up into blue, dark navy, and orange. So you can see July through December specifically over the last few years. And you can see a pretty significant reduction so far into 19 to 20 fiscal year, which is amazing. Focusing on a 12-month trend, I thought that would be a better way to kind of overview things. Basically the last 12 months compared to the 12 months before that. So we have a full year compared to a full year. There's a 5% reduction in your electric energy consumption district-wide, and that resulted in approximately $27,000 being avoided in electric cost to PG&E, which is pretty significant. And that's, even though the energy consumption reduced by 5%, costs only reduced about 3% with that $27,000. And that's because the cost is increasing, so you're not going to get that completely equivalent energy savings to cost savings, but it's going to be significant in what you're avoiding in utility costs. So that's what we really want to focus on. I want to go on. Thank you. And then focusing in on how your solar's been doing. So that's a huge part of this, too. We want to make sure your solar generation is being as efficient as possible so we can help, again, reduce what you're using of utility electricity. And it's been doing really good, and especially since my company's been involved helping consult, we've been identifying some issues that have popped up. We're continuously monitoring, checking how each of them are doing. We have the high schools and the middle schools with solar arrays, so we're logging in every couple months and seeing what's going on, if anything's issues are arising. If so, we convey that, communicate it to Mr. Bonin, and make sure that those are taken care of. Again, with the 12-month to 12-month comparison that I did on the last slide, there was a 0.5% reduction in solar generation. That's mostly attributed to the issue at Laguna Middle School, where a portion of that system was slightly damaged. So at about 26%, I ran the numbers, and it was about 26% of the system went down for about 2019. And so that kind of...
One of our food trucks ran into our solar at the high school there. So that and it took them, you know, it's difficult working with a company that's changed hands a few times. So it took over a year just to get that one area of solar back on. So, and, you know, fortunately now it's done, it's fixed. They finally have their parking back, but it was quite the ordeal.
But, yeah, good news is it's back up and running now, and it didn't make that much of a difference because the rest of the systems in the district were doing really good with their performance, so that Laguna School being slightly down for some of 2019 didn't take a detrimental hit to the district. So, yeah, everything's been going good with that one. We're continuing to monitor that, and then review some opportunities we've identified from the past and current and what we're projecting to focus on going forward. So obviously continually improving the solar performance by identifying issues and fixing them as quickly as possible. Continually working with the HVAC systems, that's your heating and air conditioning units. Those make up about 40% of your total energy consumption. So those are a really big focus of ours when we're trying to reduce total energy use. What schedules do you have them running on? What temperatures do you have them set to? Are they things turning off when nobody's there, basically? Trying to save wherever we can. And then promoting energy behaviors, too. My company, we're not just about monitoring and doing, we're about teaching and educating and sharing knowledge. Let's share what we can do between staff and students to help. Every little bit counts, even as simple as teaching everybody to turn off the lights when you leave the room for a recess and keeping the doors closed if it's hot outside and the air conditioning's on. It's these little simple changes you can make. And then some good news that actually just came about this last few weeks ago. I did a rate analysis for PG&E. So PG&E, each electric meter is placed on its specified rate structure. It's kind of similar to how your homes are tier 1, tier 2, tier 3. They're all charged a little bit differently depending on what rate you're on. I identified about 5 electric meters that could be switched to an alternate rate structure, and that would result in about $11,000 savings right there. So between that and these other little things we're doing, just trying to help save money wherever we can, because the school can use it for many other things besides electric bills. So going forward, we're going to be continually enhancing and improving the energy efficiency throughout the district and, again, monitoring everything in terms of utility consumption, solar performance, and hopefully identifying some future projects, ideas to help you further conserve. We do have opportunity with elementary schools with the solar installations we could look at going forward and just continually looking at those rates. And they have time of use, too. When are things running during peak hours? Can we trim that off a little bit to help? Because that's when electricity is the most expensive, especially during summer. So we want to I'll be fine looking at the fine details of all of that going forward, too. And there's also Energy Star benchmarking, which is a really good way to see how you stack up compared to your region, the nation, and even globally, especially districts similar to your size and weather, your climate areas, because that's your climate dictates, has a lot to do with how much energy you use and all that. So it's a good way to see your opportunity. How much lower can you go with your energy use compared to the other schools? Oh, and part of my visual didn't show up there, but I can kind of, I remember what was on there, sorry. There was a visual that I had on there that isn't showing up now, but how are we getting there? It's continually improving and modifying the policies. Let's get staff and students even more a little involved. We have educational programs and presentations we could include to the teachers, to the students, get some programs and presentations going to get everybody involved, doing rewards, recognition for everybody's efforts. Kind of don't just tell people to do everything. If they do it, we should reward them, acknowledge them for that, even with meetings like this, if nothing else. I think that was pretty much the rest of there. And then, of course, at the center of it all, the one thing in the middle that is on there, maintaining the staff and student comfort. We want to make sure we're conserving and saving energy wherever we can, but not at the cost of everybody's comfort. We want everybody to see okay, and we want everybody to be comfortable because it's a learning environment after all, and that's what's most important above everything else. So I think that is my last one, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Do you want to ask for this particular part of the presentation, is the board able to quickly ask questions, and I'll follow up with the rest? Or do you want to wait till the end for the...
I'm just curious about the solar. Will we start to see a degradation in the solar generation as the panels age, and what do we do about that?
Exactly. So some of that you can't avoid because they are older systems. So there are components. That's what a part of the monitoring is very important, especially for older systems, because there are key components that will start to fail. They have expected life spans after 5 years or so. There's certain components that we can see, too, on the computer monitor. We'll get a red flag notifying us it is failed or at least needs to be checked on. And so those will be swapped out and maintained as needed. And that's going to really help the systems keep up and going. And then the panels themselves last a good chunk of time, up to like 20 years or longer. So it's more of the smaller components that go into that. But that also will play a role in your annual solar generation between weather patterns and just the life of your system. You'll see a little bit of a decrease over the years, but with ongoing maintenance, it's going to really, really help keep that up and maintain it at a consistent level.
Mr. Buckman.
Yep. Just real quickly, so the solar panels that we have, and what I'm reading is solar panels are great for generating, but some of them are really bad for the environment when they're done. So how do our stack up? And then if we go to look for more in the future, can we specify that we want not only energy but something that's not going to hurt the environment when we're done?
When it comes to that point, it would be good to see what companies are around the area because they are increasing knowing that that's an issue because solar panels are supposed to help the environment. And then at the end, when they're done, they're actually harming them. So that is something that is pretty aware of in the industry, and it is becoming more of a focus. What happens at the end of the life of the panel? We don't want to just throw it in a landfill. And then, so there are companies that are specializing on recycling what parts they can of the panels and using them towards other panels. So when it comes to that point, my company can also help see what resources are out there to reduce that environmental impact come the time we do have to start switching out the panels themselves. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
I'll have Rebecca stay. So
okay,
through the rest of
great.
My presentation.
Thank
and
you.
If you have the questions come up, she'll be here to answer.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So again, kind of back to the construction facilities in terms of what we've done over the past couple of years, right, just for the board to kind of highlight those things. So we did complete a zero net energy project here at Los Osos Middle School. So we were one of four schools in the state of California that actually have completed that project, and we did receive some matching funds with our Prop 39 to basically renovate every light on this campus. And because we already had the solar here, it made it a facility that was able to, you know, long term meet those requirements that were required under the zero net energy project. We actually just last week received the kind of the synopsis, the summary of that, and it's linked to this board action item or this board item, so anybody can go and click on that and look at it as well if they'd like to. So again, the board early on, even before I became the superintendent of business, had put solar at our secondary schools. That forward thinking maybe cost us a little bit in the long run, and that when you did that, it was more expensive to put solar panels in. So because of production, because of everything, you know, the way it's been recently now, rates are cheaper, those types of things. It's something that I monitor. I actually look at what we owe on that, and there are payback periods in terms of where we could actually purchase those solar panels back from the company at a reduced rate. So it's kind of you just have to look at the cost-benefit analysis of them. And so that's something that we would work with someone like SiteLogic on in terms of, you know, whether those solar panels are worth, you know, our efforts for us to take over the maintenance and those types of things. But that is something we will look at, because then all of those energy savings would go directly to our budget, right, if we were to move in that direction. So, again, Prop 39 LED upgrades at all the sites. So we're actually finishing up Laguna Middle School right now. And then, of course, we're doing the two comprehensive high schools as we do the new construction. But we did, very first project was to do the gym lighting, because those are big, huge needs throughout the district, right? And, you know, when you walk in and they were orange back in the day, and now they're, you know, a nice white look to them, and it's really helped throughout. So, you know, some of these energy efficiency, my point being that some of these are actually better. They're better for learning. They're better for instruction. They're better for us to go in those directions. So, again, our new construction throughout our sites that we've done with Measure D, you know, the new title requirements for energy efficiency and roofs and the amount of energy that they take in, all of those things are being administered right through DSA and as we move forward with our projects. The board did decide to no longer use Roundup at any of our facilities, so that's something that we've done, and so no longer using that. We are trying some environmentally friendly ways of trying to work on weed abatement. And then throughout construction, it's also good to know that we do have stormwater prevention programs. So there are requirements that we have to test the water that goes into drains whenever there's a rain system. So we get alerts, Mr. Bond and myself, and so we have to go out to all those sites and we have to monitor the water that might be going into our streams and rivers and those types of things. So that, again, just a few quick bullet points just for you to know. So next slide. So transportation, bikes, walking, you know, we have updated our fleet over the past few years. So a lot of new buses that are both more efficient in terms of miles per gallon, but also much, much better in terms of emissions, right? So in terms of that environmental aspect of it. Would we be better off to have electric vehicles? Absolutely. Long term, do I think we will at someday at some point? Absolutely. It's something that Annie looks at every year when she meets with the bus contractors, talks to them about it. But currently, the battery life on those electric buses is it's not something that is really something that I think that we can invest in and solve our transportation issues today. So my hope is that those batteries will continue to improve and upgrade and get better in terms of the amount of miles that those buses can go, whether it's a smaller bus or a larger bus, and those will be something that we can invest in as a school district. So I do have Annie right now. She's actually going to be providing the board a report on transportation numbers, routes, those types of things coming up. And so we are going to look at the amount of miles per route and those types of things to see if that is an area that we can move to in the future. So that's kind of hits the first two. You know, the fact is we have a large transportation fleet, and we've been one of the few districts in the county, and kudos to Annie Sharp, who trains people
We train our own employees here. So we have been able to actually get staff, train them, and run our buses. And so, and what that means is that more kids on the bus, less cars on the road. So that's a positive thing, I think. And I will say city transportation as well as county transportation have been fantastic. They've really worked hard at getting out bus passes to kids. You know, they offer the free programs of the summer in terms of transportation. So we try to highlight that. We try to share that information with students. And so I do think that's a positive thing. We could do a better job of probably connecting with the group of it's biking and walking to school group through San Luis County. You know, for a few years, I went to those meetings, and not a lot happened, and they kept transitioning people through the job itself, the leadership there. So it's something that it just didn't mean a lot to me in terms of going. So I will renew my efforts with that group and see if there's something that, hopefully they're at a stable place to kind of move forward with that and see if there's ways that we can help. I do know that we have bike rodeos and a lot of schools do things like that, right, to promote walking to school, biking to school. But it's definitely an area we can grow on that route. Again, we added a new bike lane recently at the district office, pedestrian walkway. We have a lot of students that ride their bikes to school, in particular at San Luis Obispo High School, a lot of bikes, which is great. And from a transportation standpoint, we do have a 1.5, so aerial view of, in terms of when we provide bus service or not, 2.5 for walking zones. And so that is something that we will change periodically depending on where students are, if it's a danger for them, those types of things. We do look at different stops. But that's really where the city transportation has really picked up for us and helped us. So we went through a year there where we got rid of secondary transportation, and a lot of kids started riding the city bus. Overfilled, we had to meet with the city. So since we brought back secondary transportation, a lot of the kids have stayed on the bus. So they continue to use that service. So hopefully that's something that they're using not only for school, but, throughout the community, throughout their, weekends and other times as well. So it's a great service for our community. So next one, Mandy. So in terms of utilities, water, gas, electric, trash, again, we talked about Prop 39, talked about solar panels. We did institute a program of putting water meters at all of our sites. So every single one of our kind of big fields throughout the campus, we have meters that are supposed to measure the water and the moisture levels, and that way if it rains, they don't turn on. That has been a tough system to manage. So it's working, and we do use it, and we can, today, for some reason, the sprinklers had turned on over by the tennis courts at San Luis Obispo High School, so Mr. Salachi was able to, on his iPad, turn them off through the meter system. So there are some good things about that system, but it's one that's not necessarily perfected, I would say, in terms of the moisture levels, and they have to have Wi-Fi, those types of things. But it is working. We are monitoring. We are able to measure the amount that our sprinklers turn on, the amount of water used, those types of things. Last year, of course, was a great year. It rained a lot. This year, much tougher in terms of, the need for water. So you are seeing the effects of climate, in some ways, when things like that in terms of water use. We have added new water filler stations at all of our sites. So that was something that really became popular, kids bringing their water bottles, wanting to have some type of a filtered water system. The board, if you'll remember, you went through a taste test, remember, where you tasted all the different waters from all the sites. We used different water faucets around, and Del Mar was victorious after we had changed their pipes, fortunately. So that was a good experience, but something that is definitely, that is something that is being more ingrained, I would say, in our students, as well as our board, in terms of looking at, reusable water bottles, those types of things. We started, and this is Mr. Bonin himself, is really focused on this drought-resistant landscaping. So you saw some of that at Morro Bay High School in the front there, also with the J-Wing, where we've begun to use rocks, low-drought plants. So that's something I see us continuing as we move into San Luis Obispo High School and different construction projects. We continue to look for ways to lessen our trash load. So this is probably the biggest area for us to work on as a school district, is just recycling in general, trash, and really working with students to kind of key in and help us with that. So it's been reduced in some ways, especially at our secondary schools, because kids were throwing everything into the recycle cans. So, you know, they moved into the classrooms, so hopefully teachers watching that it would help with that. But that's definitely an area that we can continue to work on and do a better job at. However, we have moved to a much paperless system as a school district. So almost everything, I see you're all with your iPads or computers here, you know, instead of the gigantic board docs. I remember when I first started San Luis Coastal that used to get mailed to you right each week. And so from an educational standpoint, Los Osos Middle School, perfect example, right, of going paperless, doing everything online, has definitely been a positive move in the right direction. A lot of our newsletters, Parent Square, you know, different things, we are moving away from using paper. Again, from the kitchen standpoint, no longer using styrofoam. Food packaging is definitely more green. You know, we have Aaron Primer, which you'll see in a minute when we talk about food service, who is very active in this way to help. And she is currently using, we've begun a bigger composting program at Laguna Middle School for the food service department. As I stated, we need to work on our recycling programs. In terms of curriculum instruction, again, another area that, you know, that we have some things going, probably can continue to expand and work on in terms of really highlighting some of the issues when it talks about sustainability and climate change throughout the curriculum. But we do have the new Next Generation Science Standards moving forward that we've been working on with our staff over the past, I think, 4 years now, with Tristan Chorba leading the way as a science TOSA for the school district. We have a new program that we're starting off here in San Luis Coastal, and really the, working with the Creekland Conservatory, or conservation group, I should say, and looking at protecting our waterway, our watersheds. And so that it's a trout program, kind of tying into the classroom, working with students. So that's something that the foundation, Mrs. McGrath, has been working with them to kind of get established. So if there's projects like that that we can build into our curriculum, I think it enhances the students' experience. We also have a Miyosi grant at Pacheco Elementary, which was a school grant project, to see if they could tie a school garden program into the curriculum, get people more involved, and is that something we can replicate at sites. So that is an area that's tricky. School gardens are a tricky area for us as a school district in that oftentimes, a school garden project is led by somebody who's really gung-ho and fired up about it, and they set it up, they get it going, and then after sixth grade, they leave. And so it takes that next wave of parents and community support to come in and keep that garden going, right? So there's been multiple requests about starting gardens that are you know, throughout our district to kind of get them established. And so that's something we'll be monitoring and working with them on. I know that Aaron is very focused at having some type of a school garden at Laguna Middle School and a farm-to-table situation right there, right, where the kids can use it. We can use those fruits and vegetables that can go right onto the school lunch program. So that's something she is focused on. We do have a nationally recognized program, an agriculture FFA program, right, at San Luis Obispo High School, Morro Bay High School, great programs. Secondary courses, so we do offer environmental science, marine biology, elements of climate change are embedded in those science courses. Again, could it be something that is more specific, targeted, focused on? That's something, you know, in terms of working with our science teachers throughout K-12 to look at. We do have our elementary science camps. So fifth grade on the coast, sixth grade in the city that kids attend that have that, you know, kind of that focus on the environment and science and, you know, nature and those you know, key aspects. Pacific Beach High School has their farm program that they're currently doing right now and has continued. It's been very successful. The kids love working on the farm there over by Los Osos Valley Road, Madonna area. And then, of course, we have campus clubs throughout our schools that from environmental clubs to, you know, just any climate clubs, you know, where kids are able to start and focus on whatever they'd like to do right at our high school. So we see a lot of those types of things popping up throughout. So next slide. So school lunch program, again, I just asked Erin to put together, so, you know, a few kind of key components. Again, she's being recognized this month as the I believe it's Organic Farm Advocate of the Year. In our county. So Erin is fantastic, has really done a great job. I'll share that information with the board in Friday notes. But she has really transformed our food service program and continues to work on ways of making it better, right, from working with local farms We had to look up what pulses were, right, which are seeds, actually, so I didn't know, just a lot of different things that I think it was the first mushroom burger that I ever had that Aaron had made. It was absolutely fantastic, right? Fantastic. So we were tricking the kids into eating the mushroom burger versus a hamburger patty. But again, she's done a great job moving us forward in that realm, is very conscientious about her relationships with farmers in our area and working with them and trying to use local foods and processed food, you know, not processed foods, those types of things, which is good for our kids, right? And so she is probably, unlike all the other ones where I don't and we don't necessarily do a good job of sharing all the things we're doing as a school district in this way, we don't advertise it as much, Erin advertises it. So you see it on her trucks. You see it on the website. She does a great job of promoting kind of where we're headed with that. Again, talked a little bit about school gardens and many classroom sites that she's connected with and really trying to do some of that cross-curriculum instruction, Jana Moody's in this example, of working with her there at Laguna Middle School on some of the items at the school lunch program. In the notes, I actually had a whole nother section of that Erin shared, so you can pull that up and take a look at it as well. But she has all kinds of things that kind of go along with this this area, which is fantastic. We're very fortunate to have her. Next slide. So again, next steps, right? So we've done a lot of things over the past few years, which have been great, right? So is there more that we can do? Absolutely, right? So I think it's time for us to kind of put a committee together, put a group together that can look at kind of next steps for the school district, where we can head, what things are attainable for the school district to move forward on to. And it's an interesting one, right, for me, in that, you know, a lot of the legislation, a lot of those things are not necessarily, you know, the school board isn't going to increase the life expectancy of batteries for solar vehicles. Right, like you're not going to pass legislation to do that, right? So it's we do have to push our state, local legislators, our federal legislators, right, to put the investment in to those items so that we can make progress and have the technology to move forward. So that said, there are things we can do as a school district, right, that are climate sensitive, climate friendly, sustainable practices that help us with our budget, help us with the use of utilities. So in talking with Dr. Prater, our goal was to kind of put this committee together of individuals, so students and staff and some experts in the field who could meet with us, kind of look at a plan, a sustainability plan, things that we could move forward as a school district, and then bring that back to the board so that we could share those information items with the board and just, you know, what are we going to do next year? What would we do in the next 2 years? What would we do in the next 3 years in terms of moving forward? So that is what we're actually asking the board tonight to do, is to approve the Sustainability Advisory Committee. And so I know a lot of people have would love to talk about the subject with the board, and we welcome their input.
Thank you. So at this time, we do have several requests to speak. And I would ask Mrs. Roger will be calling people forward. Again, just to briefly reiterate, each speaker will have 3 minutes in which to address the board. So, Mrs. Roger, take it away.
Okay, I have quite a few requests to speak, so I guess, and I'll take them in the order received. I think given the number of people, I would ask that perhaps you not be redundant if someone has already said something, then we've heard it, and we certainly are listening very carefully to what you all have to say. So the first person is Landis Blakesley, followed by Ashley Thorshore? I'm sorry? Thorshore?
Ms. Dawson, set the timer, please. Thank you.
Oh, Is that
we were told we were able to bring a PowerPoint because of certain issues, so we're using the one on here, so on the dot cam.
And the time using any equipment goes towards the 3 minutes, so just be aware. Thank you.
Okay, cool. Hi, my name is Landis Blakesley, and basically I'm one of the representatives for our Sustainable Action Committee. So would you like to start? So this is a picture of our Earth taken on the last Apollo mission. This image is actually called the Blue Marble, and it was the first image to capture the complete Earth. So carbon dioxide is by far one of the biggest contributors to climate change. The main source by far is the burning of fossil fuels. We still depend on coal, oil, and gas for 80% of all the energy the world economy needs. You can see from this graph that after World War II, it starts rising dramatically. So using ice core samples, this graph shows the natural cycles of CO2 in the Earth's atmosphere. These dips show times when we were in ice age and the northern hemisphere was covered by ice sheets 1 to 2 kilometers thick. So basically, this is relatively normal. Here's the Earth's temperature at the same time. You can see from this, the temperature goes up and down with the CO2. This is the last ice age, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th. And through all this time, you can see CO2 and temperature go up and down together in a lockstep. In all of history, CO2 has never gone above 280 or 300 ppm, or parts per million. However, today, we are actually concentrations up to 415. So if this much of a difference on the cold side is a kilometer of ice over your head, how much difference would this be on the warm side, as you can see? If we continue on the same road that we're on, here's where the scientists tell us it's going to be in the next 40 years if we don't make changes. This is what we cannot let happen under any circumstances. So these are the 16 of the 17 hottest years on record since 2001. And the hottest year of all has been 2016. Climate change is real, guys. We're seeing fires in California and throughout Australia. Sea levels are rising, and this will affect Morro Bay and Morro Bay High. So we need to do all that we can.
Hi, I'm Ashley. As Landis established, the future that my generation is going to face is very unclear. Scientists have predicted that we only have about 10 years before humanity's effects on our environment become irreversible. And we as students are looking to schools to help prepare us for our future and model how we can adapt and move forward through all these changes. And I doubt that there's any doubt in this room that the classroom, how classrooms are structured, have incredible impacts on how our future leaders are modeled. So we are here today asking that the district continue the steps that you've taken because, excuse me, we acknowledge that you have made wonderful strides towards more environmentally friendly schools, and we are very thankful. But we also acknowledge that it is very important that we keep going because there really is no time to lollygag with this issue. You can. Integrating sustainability into our schools will not only reduce the district's environmental footprint and generate major cost savings. Integrating sustainability will promote career pathways for our students that are consistent with the changing economy and will prepare students for the challenges that are coming in the 21st century. The great thing is we are not alone in our push for sustainable schools. Nationwide, schools are changing and adapting, and districts are learning how they can change to be more beneficial to their students' future. And today, we are just asking that you continue to join us in that fight and help protect our futures, because they're pretty important.
Thank you. Jennifer Bauer, followed by Quinn Brussel.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Bauer, and I'm a second grade teacher in the district and a mom of two students who went through K-12 here. I'm also the chair of the local Sierra Club and a climate reality trained leader. So I'm part of the team here today and that has developed and brought this proposed sustainability plan to you. And there are a few key components that we'd like to highlight. So, as a teacher and someone who cares about children, I'm concerned about their future. And as we all know, education is the key to changing lives and to changing the world. So, as you know, you're going to be voting tonight on the making a district climate action team. And so this would, Ryan already went over this, so this is kind of redundant, but just a team of administrators, teachers, and students and community members. The document that we gave to you is just a proposed plan, but we need more people to come together and to partner with this and to come up with a plan, because as we all know, this district is doing great things, but it's really good to have objectives, clear objectives, and goals as to what we're going to do. This is too important of an issue, and coming together, I think we could do some really great things, because as educators, we make a huge impact on children, and we need to make sure that this world is safe for them in the future. One of the aspects is also to report back to school sites with actions. I work with wonderful teachers, but there's not a lot of conversation about this issue, and we need more awareness on it. Tonight, Rebecca spoke about the energy savings you're doing. If it's just so simple, if we just take back to our school sites, hey, these are ways that we can cut back on energy. Just simple things like that, teachers hear, and they're like, okay, you know, a lot of teachers are still using plastic water bottles. If they knew that that's not a great thing to do, they would stop doing that. But we need that education and awareness on it. Another aspect of this is to educate, integrate, and elevate environmental literacy. While the NGSS standards include climate change, a 2019 NPR poll showed that only 43% of teachers are actually talking about that, are talking about climate change in the classroom. And in that same poll, they found that more than 80% of parents in the U.S. support the teaching of climate change. We need to integrate this more into our education and into our curriculum. Another thing we would like to have done is to promote increased awareness through assemblies and guest speakers. Integrating climate action and environmental literacy, I'm almost out of time, is also great for project-based learning. And,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good evening. So regarding reducing environmental impact, we have some ideas that we came up with. I'll try to mention new things that haven't been talked about. So already you guys are doing a good job with the whole solar panels, LED, reducing environmental impact and saving money in the long run at the same time. And then we also had some more specific ideas regarding implementation are for one thing, you know, we all use Google for everything now in this school district. And we thought there's this Google plugin called Ecosia. It's a plugin on Google Chrome. It's a B certified corporation, so they've been checked out by the B certified corporations are verified corporations that help the environment, and they try to the 80% of their profits go to planting trees, and it's a simple Chrome extension. It doesn't require anything to change. It's just there. So for that's one thing that we talked about as a group. We also talked about reducing waste products. More education on dealing with waste, because I think the majority of people I know would recycle properly and deal with their waste properly if they knew how, but I think most people that I know have no idea how to recycle. The more I look into it, the more I realize how complicated it is. There's very subtle distinctions on things you can and can't recycle, and I think people just kind of go to the trash because they don't know what to do or put things that should not be recycled in the recycling. Also, promoting zero waste, lessening paper, and phasing out single-use plastics in the classroom. A lot of stuff is online, so that's a good way that we're phasing out paper right now. You know, getting rid of plastic water bottles, and yeah, just trying to be creative with how we keep things as away from paper as much as possible. I thought of this, getting rid of
paper towels in the bathrooms. We could have, like, hand dryers. And I think because people waste so many paper towels, like a superfluous amount of paper towels are just lying on the floor and everything. And then also promoting alternative transport to schools, incentivizing employee carpool and informing students about what impact driving actually has. Cost savings is what I meant to say. School districts spend $8 billion for operating budgets and energy, and if we shift, become more sustainable, this could be significant cost savings over time. Estimated $2 billion saved nationwide by implementing energy efficiency measures. That about sums it up.
Thank you.
Ran out of time.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Adam Rainbolt, followed by Marissa Dinsmore.
Hello, my name is Adam Rimble. I'm a junior at Moore Bay High School and the editor of the Moore Bay High School newspaper, The Spyglass. While working with KCPY on an article, both me and my co-editor, Marissa, were able to get a better idea of what the future will look like for our area, which includes in the next 10 years an expected at least 1 foot rise in sea level and a 7 to 10 foot rise in the next 80 years. This will have profound impacts on our school as students will struggle to get to campus on flooded highways, as property values will go down, which contributes to a lack of school funding, and as iconic sites like the beaches and the Embarcadero are eroded away by rising seas. For the past 60 years, MBHS has enjoyed being one of the closest schools to the ocean, and the next coming years are crucial for us to be able to continue that success. Promoting understanding of this issue through journalism and through education is absolutely necessary for the betterment of our future through the most precious resources our schools can offer our students.
Hi, my name is Marissa Dinsmore, and I'm also editor along with Adam at Morro Bay High School. To add on to what Adam has said, our community has not yet come close to adequately preparing for this future that we face. It's necessary that our school district takes the first steps in properly moving forward. Our campuses need to be moved towards sustainability and educating the next generation with these topics. There are proposed measures on the report about sea level rise that our community can take. These include accommodating, modifying, and relocating assets like buildings and highways. We have written extensive articles on this report that summarize it. It's a like 60-page report. So if you are interested in learning more about sea level rise, our articles can be found at mbspyglass.org. That is our school newspaper website, and there is a tab under that that has all the information about sea level rise that we have researched. Sea level rise is inevitable, and we must always remember that and make sure we are prepared for the future and are able to adapt and sustain our coastal communities and our schools. Thank you.
Okay, next we have Gary Bauer, followed by Lucille Basco.
Thank you. Many of you have met my daughter, Jordan Bauer, who was one of the people that put forth the initiative in 2018. So I have a letter from her. My name is Jordan Bauer, and I'm a recent Slo High graduate. I've gone through K through 12 in the district, and I've seen how much the members of the board put the students first. In those 13 years, I've also seen our world getting warmer, natural disasters becoming more frequent, and people who we have elected to work for us sit idly by. Where we stand today, we have less time than it took me to go through K-12 to make significant changes in every aspect of our life to limit rising temperatures to 1.5 degrees centigrade, or else the changes to our environment will be irreversible. I wake up every morning full of anxiety because I feel we are tiptoeing around the most important issue of our generation, and people are not waking up to it. I am studying environmental science at Sonoma State. Last October, I was evacuated due to the Kincade Fire that was burning less than 20 miles from our school. I was forced to be evacuated for over a week, and before that, the air quality was so bad we had to wear masks as we went outside. However, I know I'm not the only one experiencing the impacts of climate crisis. This summer, I was trained by Al Gore as a climate reality leader, and some things I learned were that in Pakistan, they're already digging mass graves in anticipation of the next heat wave. The last one there killed 1,200 people. Events such as Superstorm Sandy and Hurricane Harvey that used to be once in 100,000-year events are now becoming more normal, and that's not right. Economic losses can total up to $653 billion in the next in the past 2 years alone. However, I have also learned that we have all the solutions we need at hand. Today, over two-thirds of global population lives in countries where solar and wind are the cheapest sources of new energy. Globally, wind could supply worldwide electricity consumption 40 times over. We have the technology. We just need the means and the willpower. Climate change has also dramatically changed the way I look at life. I've decided not to have children because of the fact that I do not want to bring children into this world. I consciously feel that I can't keep kids who are when there's a scientific consensus that the lives of children are going to be very difficult as a result of climate change. In addition, as a young person, I will have to grow old with a changing planet. I think one of the most important things we can do is educate the youth. I believe schools have a unique ability to teach students about how they're impacting the Earth and how they could each have the potential to make positive, tangible changes in the world. The decision to integrate sustainability into the district's organizational culture and curriculum will reduce the district's entire environmental footprint, support student achievement, develop the next generation of environmental students, and will generate cost savings. I would like to thank the board for supporting students and passing the Climate Action Resolution in 2018 and strongly urge them to take one more step by joining school districts and organizations across the country who are taking action for a better future for youth like me. Sincerely, Jordan Bauer. Thank you.
Thank you. Lucille Bosco?
Hi, I'm Lucille Bosco. I came here tonight. I'm not from the district, but this issue is near and dear to my heart. I feel that the district really needs to take action. We've done a lot of talking, but the issue is serious, and I have got, I represent the climate reality group, Al Gore's group. I'm the local chapter chair, co-chair, and I have, with some other people, we have attended the Board of Supervisors, the integrated waste management issue, and they're going to vote on it to ban the plastic bags. Waste management can no longer recycle plastic bags, and the plastic bags are killing us, they're killing our fish, they're killing our birds. We have to get changed to the way we used to do things, and we used to bring in our cloth bags and do all of that. And our generation is the one that got us in this mess. So I think it's important that we also teach the young people, you know, the, of sustainability practices, because this is the world we're leaving them with. And I saw the perfect group to start this off were the leaders that spoke in the beginning of this evening. They were sensational. So now you have the topic for them, and they can go out there and just change this world.
Thank you. I have Chris Reed, followed by Eric Viem.
Good evening, board. My name is Chris Reed. I live in Los Osos with my family, and my 7-year-old son and 5-year-old daughter both attend Monarch Grove, and I just want to start by saying thank you for providing such an incredible environment for them to grow in. We are so grateful to live here and to call this school district our home. I crafted a long list of ideas and comments. It became a tic-tac-toe board during the last hour, so it's a little hard to read. So instead of that, I'm gonna take a different tack and actually talk about this kind of magical thing we can do. We can travel back here from the future, and I have really good news. We just came back from the year 2032. My daughter has just graduated high school at Morro Bay Elementary, and she had an amazing education. because 12 years ago, this board took action to say, yes, we've done so many amazing things in the past, but we are at this incredible moment where the world is changing rapidly around us, and our children need a skill set to thrive in that environment. As the economy is changing around us, as the climate's changing around us, our children need a skill set to thrive in that environment. They also need a skill set to cope with the loss and the emotional impacts they're going to feel. We've already seen that the awareness of the climate crisis in our children and young adults is having a negative mental impact. And so having positive coping strategies, being able to work through those challenges is real. And I come bringing good news that this board has provided so many good foundational supportive actions that in 2032, students in your school district are all actively learning all the amazing technologies that we've come up with. They're all ready to enter college with a skill set that allows them to thrive, and they're mentally tough and resilient because we've shown them that although the climate changes and that's scary, having these generational opportunities are also chances for us to reimagine how we orient to each other and to the topics we teach and to the ways that we learn. So I want to say congratulations on the action. And since I still have 51 seconds, we also have some suggestions. We think that staff's recommendation is a really great thing. We know climate crisis is challenging because we need to move as fast as possible and do as much as possible, but we can only move at the speed of trust, so we have to go fast and slow at the same time. So I think the staff's proposed approach works really well. We would recommend, though, that we tie some interim deadlines to it so we also have a sense of urgency and so that we are moving forward as rapidly as we are able to, given the dual need to establish trust with each other. There's also so many community groups and organizations and public agencies that are doing this work really well, and so we would suggest that continuing to network with those folks will allow you to multiply your forces and really achieve all the benefits that we know you can. So thank you so much, and we're so proud to be a part of this district.
Thank you.
School board members, my name is Eric Viem. I live in San Luis Obispo, and I have 4-year-old twin boys that I'm looking forward to being in the district as they get just a little bit older. I chair the Slow Climate Coalition, and we're a regional organization that is creating a vibrant, just, and climate-resilient Central Coast. I want to thank staff for the great work that they've done and the proposal that they brought forward. I want to let you know that the Climate Coalition supports the recommendation with some amendments. We believe that there are opportunities for both immediate action and as our school board policy level direction to shape the work of the Sustainability Committee. I would encourage you to really internalize climate leadership and climate literacy as the focus of this group. The things that can be done now and on an ongoing basis with support from your superintendent and all of your faculty and students is creating a culture of climate leadership. And what that looks like is communicating from the top, right, in the school newspaper, and in all of the opportunities to demonstrate that the school district is leading on climate. The second is to set a goal. The city of San Luis Obispo has committed to carbon neutrality by 2035. That goal has inspired others, such as Camp Slow, to join. Our National Guard base here is also committed to 2035. And so I would challenge you to step arm in arm with those organizations and commit to carbon neutrality by 2035. Set that as a timeline and then set more shorter-term interim goals to move things forward. Also, partnerships. As I mentioned, Slow City, Camp Slow, Cal Poly, the Slow Climate Coalition, Monterey Bay Community Power, where there are so many resources, and I understand often within the school district that resources are constrained, and there are amazing people in this community, and there are amazing parents and students that are part of the school that can bring amazing resources to bear. There have
just by having a 2035 goal, the city of San Luis Obispo has brought in significantly higher, just large dollars in terms of grants. And so by the school district and the university, the base, the city partnering on grants, we're going to be able to bring more under this narrative of climate leadership. And then focus on the big opportunities. We need to eliminate natural gas in these buildings. So building renewals and new construction, we should be looking to eliminate natural gas. Focus on transportation, focus on curriculum, and focus on resilience. I want to be here in support of your work as leader in the Soul Climate Coalition. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, next I have Myla Vujovic-Labar, followed by Sarah Cole.
Good evening, school board members and district administration. My name is Myla Vujovic-Labar. I have been a teaching Spanish and social science in the San Luis Coastal Unified School District for 36 years. It is a joy to be a member of the District Wellness Committee in the company of Aaron Primer. It is also an honor to now be serving as vice chair for our local Sierra Club. While reflecting on all of the forward-thinking progressive ideas and practices that our district has mastered to be fiscally responsible, to be inclusive and equal, and to hone course offerings and curriculum in order to improve the education of every child in our school community, there is one glaring area for improvement. It is time to approve this sustainability plan for the San Luis Coastal Unified School District with specific goals and objectives towards climate action that involves students, teachers, and parents. We can no longer ignore the effects of climate change and must take action to protect our children and future generations. Climate change is one of the most pressing issues of our time. As a global community, we have 10 years to make significant changes to limit rising temperatures and to prevent irreversible damages. School personnel have the potential to make positive, tangible environmental changes while teaching students to be stewards of their communities, the earth, and its resources. Weaving coordinated climate change literacy into a K-12 curriculum will prepare students for the challenges of the 21st century and promote innovative career pathways that meet the demands of a green economy. Every student should be introduced to the pillars of being an environmentalist at an early age. Our district should form partnerships with activists in the community, as has been mentioned. There's numerous resources and experience for the implementation of sustainable practices. As a local teacher, there are pragmatic steps that should be taken now. Just a few short ideas are knowing that students do not use school showers in our locker rooms, those shower heads could easily be transformed into refilling stations for water bottles that the students already bring to school. This would hydrate the students without having to miss precious class time and would cut down on the use of plastic water bottles on our campus. As far as transportation, many students said they would like to walk or bike to school, but often consider it to be too dangerous. I encourage our school district to work with city leaders on the coast and in San Luis Obispo to strongly advocate for more Class 1 bike paths in existing new developments. In regard to transportation, I applaud all the deals that have been made with RTA to encourage student bus use. Personally, I would also like to see a bus bench at every single stop. Recycling on our school campuses would be vastly improved if the integrated waste management could be networked with school leaders and teachers. Wonderful information is on their website, and it should be publicized often in our school newsletters. It is www.iwma.com. A major recycling effort could also be key to students' community service efforts. Thank you very much, and for approving the plan tonight. Thank you.
Evening. My name is Sarah Cohen. I am a parent in the district. My daughter, Anya, is a third grader at Monarch Grove. And not only am I a parent and part of this community, but I am an educator in higher education and a librarian. You know it's serious when the librarians show up. I'm here simply to advocate and encourage you to ratify, if that is the right word, the sustainability plan. I'm particularly interested in objectives 2 and 3. And just want to say how much I think it's important for us to think about this in a more comprehensive and institutionalized fashion rather than one-offs. While I appreciate the presentation that was given earlier about all the things that are going on in our facilities, I do think that there's an opportunity, particularly curricularly, for our students to be thinking about and learning about ways that they can apply their critical thinking skills, their creativity, their problem solving, their leadership skills, and their curiosity to the problems that are going to face not only our generation, but certainly theirs. I also will say that I think this is an incredible opportunity for us to model inter- and multidisciplinary learning for our students and to focus on the learn-by-doing ethos that permeates through our county. I think this is a remarkable opportunity, and while scary, I will admit that my daughter, when I said this is what we were doing this evening, said, "I don't want to go. It's boring and scary." I don't think she feels that way anymore because she has asked if she could say a few things as well. But before she speaks, I did just want to say thank you for giving the community an opportunity to voice their support for these efforts. And thank you. Anya would like to say a few words. Can you reach it?
In the beginning, I thought this would be scary, but now I think that we should take charge and we should try to help stop climate change and help try to make a change.
Thank you.
Okay, Quinn Brady, followed by Justin Bradshaw.
Good evening. First, I just want to say thank you so much for the work that you put into this. I know there's a lot of people that are really motivated on this issue, and I know that, Mr. Pinkerton, you are not the sustainability coordinator for the whole district, but you did a fine job on that. And on that note, I would really love to advocate that you take into consideration hiring or designating staff time to a sustainability expert for or coordinator for the district. And I happen to know a sustainability coordinator in this room who works with the city who I think would be really willing to partner and work with you on that. There are just a lot of really fine folks in this room tonight who said a lot of the things that I believe and want to say, and I'm just really glad that we're here having this conversation, and I think that establishing this committee is a huge, great step in the right direction, and I also want to echo my friends and colleagues by saying we have to continue to move forward with urgency. So I would love to just have a discussion tonight, if possible, about what that timeline really looks like, and be ambitious and be bold when we say we're going to put together a committee and come back with results. Like, what is the timeline for seeing some of those things? And in the meantime, what steps can be taken as that committee forms? Are there things that we can do as a district to take some initial steps, to meet with some partners like IWMA or the city of San Luis Obispo, establish some of those relationships, and have those things flourishing? I think that I spoke with the board director of the IWMA today, and I believe that there will be resources at your fingertips and people wanting to give you free things. So I would strongly encourage initiating some of those conversations now. And I also, somebody spoke to this earlier, but I think that creating a culture that takes leadership on this issue is really important. And you have done that so beautifully on equity and inclusion. And I think that that is felt by parents who are paying attention, but also by parents who aren't paying attention, and by community members who don't have kids in this district. We see the work that is being done on equity and inclusion, and I think that climate action is essential and is a partner to that work. And you have demonstrated the ability to flex your muscles and the courage to do the right thing in leadership on that issue. So I know that you will do the right thing on this issue as well. And we talk about at home the student Greta, who has really revolutionized this conversation worldwide. And Greta continues to go to school because she believes that there is a future. And she is fighting every day to make these conversations happen, but she continues toward education. So if this was not a conversation that shouldn't be happening, she would not be in school. And so I'm grateful that we're doing this here, and I'm ready to stand with you and all these folks to continue to support your leadership. Thank you.
Thank you.
This
Hello, school board. Hi, my name is Justin Bradshaw, and my 8-year-old goes to Bishop Peak Elementary. Couldn't be here because of karate practice. But with the exception of the 30 child size of his second grade class, I love his school. I love our walk to take him there, and I love our little city. And over the last few years, I've taken much time away from running my small business to volunteer with the Slow Climate Coalition. There are several of us in this room today who have helped bring 100% greenhouse gas-free energy to the Central Coast. We've helped the city of SLO establish the most ambitious carbon neutrality goal in the country, which you can have too if you want it, and have done many public events teaching the community about climate action, including one at SLO High last year where I met some of the students who brought this initiative to you. I'm here to say that our coalition of experts and activists are prepared to help you achieve this goal. Now, I'm sure I don't have to convince you that climate change is real and a serious threat to our community and our planet, but I would like to remind you that it will have a disproportionately negative impact on the generation you are charged with protecting and educating. That's why I'm here to support the ones bringing this before you today. I'm here to remind you that the solutions are many. Increasingly, these solutions are also excellent investments and amazing ways to engage this generation of concerned citizens. After all, what could be more concerning than for a child than having a livable environment for the future? From your slides, just a 5% efficiency improvement saved your district over $11,000. That's just the tip of the iceberg. It's time to be finished already with the low-hanging fruit of LED lighting and recycling programs and focus on the bigger impact items like installing solar and battery storage on-site at every school, like climate and sustainability education in every classroom, like electric school buses for at least the shorter routes. Now, like having a dedicated district staff member to focus on these issues. Solar is vastly cheaper now and provides fast payback in here in California. Adding more solar, including battery storage, could provide much higher money savings than your efforts so far, as well as resilience from grid outages that are surely coming during fire seasons. I'm struck by your quote up there by the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. The time is always right to do what is right. The time for a culture of climate leadership is now. Please fast-track this commission's work and prioritize these changes with a dedicated staff member. We have no time to waste. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone who did not submit a request, a written request, but would like to speak at this time? Please, come forward. State your name.
My name is Dylan Jones with One Cool Earth, where we create awesome school garden program to power healthy, happy, smart youth. So I just wanted to really actually come here to say, you know, thank you to the board, but also thank you to this group of amazing citizens who've come up. We do garden-based education with kids, but you've got a community here that's really pushing for this. So I was just inspired by what they said to come up here. And I live down in Santa Maria, so I'm not going to take my whole 3 minutes, but I wanted to say thank you. And One Cool Earth is also out here to support your needs. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I see Mr. Unger's light on.
Yes. So first of all, I'm going to tell a little story, and I know Jennifer's heard this, but I think. As you may or may not know, I'm involved with the National School Board Association. And last April, our region, the Pacific region, brought forward a climate change resolution that was essentially gutted by the National School Boards Association. I was very disappointed. I was especially disappointed because the gutting was led by Florida, if you can believe that. I'm proud to say that the Pacific region of the National School Boards Association is bringing a climate change resolution back to their delegate assembly in April, although I must say I'm not overly optimistic about it. I'm also happy that the California School Boards Association has decided to initiate a climate change task force. And I think that's very important. And that's something also that I was involved with and trying to encourage the leadership of the California School Boards Association to get involved with. But more so, I think all politics is local. And I really think that bringing things to the district level is what we need to do. And we need to walk the walk. And of course, I'm going to support this. I really did want to thank the students for coming. Students, you have modeled the kinds of behavior and the kinds of things that we want from you. We want you to take action. We want you to be involved. We want you to be informed. We want you to think scientifically. We want you to do all the things that you're doing. And I thank you, thank you, thank you for coming here, because your voice, the voice of the youth, is the most important voice here. And I love all of the rest of you, but I really think the students' voice is the most important voice. That said, I'd like to move the approval of a formation of a district sustainability advisory committee.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Ms. Frame, and well, now we're having further discussion. We're not voting yet,
it's,
Mr. Millar.
It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
It's all good.
I know.
It's all good.
We will do that now. Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. I'm going to also echo Mr. Unger's remarks and thank everybody. The students of this district brought forward in 2018 a resolution. I was really proud to have been part of bringing that forward. That really sparked within this district the urgency and the need to look at it. And this entire board supported that. There's personal actions that you take, there's community actions, and then there's government actions. And I think this board has done a good job. I think there's a lot more it can do. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens. There are several things that I will bring forward to Mr. Pinkerton that I participated in through the Green Schools Initiative and through other aspects, and I'll bring those forward. Just for example, the EPA has a program that's already on the books, that already works, it's been used in schools across the country, that involves students in basically a STEAM model. And so there's many of those things that are out there and existing. And I'm proud to say that Mr. Unger's push for that task force at CSBA, and I've been appointed to that task force, and really proud to be doing that. So I'm all in favor.
Ms. Roger.
Thank you. Those that know me know that I am living climate change 24/7 because my husband is very involved, and he's involved in Citizens Climate Lobby. But there are a number of groups that are working in this arena. I totally support the creation of a sustainability advisory committee, and I wonder what the board's feelings are on having board representation on that committee.
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I had thought about that, and originally when I read the composition of the committee, I was thinking it would be nice to have a board member, but everything that this committee would bring forward will ultimately be brought forward to the board for our approval.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that having a board member on that will enhance the work of the committee. In fact, sometimes I think when board members become too involved in committees, it can detract from the work that they have to do, knowing that it's going to come back here anyway. So although I would like to, you know, my gut tells me, gosh, I'd like to see somebody on there. I'd like it to be me. I'm happy with the composition of the committee as is.
Okay. Is that the consensus of the board?
Yes.
Yeah.
That there is, yes. Thank you, Mr. Unger. You expressed my feelings completely. I really appreciate that this has been student-driven. I will look forward to reports coming before the board as on some sort of basis as determined by the committee itself. I have a question for you, Mr. Pinkerton.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to setting up, if there's been a motion in a second, we haven't voted yet, as you know, but I'm curious as to when you feel this advisory committee might come together and have an initial meeting?
So I think the next step, if the board approves it tonight, would be Dr. Prater, myself, Mrs. McGrath, will come up with kind of a process for selecting members to the group. That would go out, my hope would be end of this month, beginning of March, get, you know, kind of applications back from kids, from staff members, those types of things, and that we would meet at least a couple times this school year.
Okay. Okay. Right. Any further discussion, Mr. Millar?
Well, it's my understanding that this would be a committee that would report to the superintendent, and then the superintendent would determine what kinds of actions to take, either by directing staff to do so or by bringing things that are required to be brought back to the board. Is that everyone's understanding?
That's the idea, right?
Okay.
Which is normal protocol for when we have committees, absolutely.
It's similar, I envision it as similar to the Common Ground Task Force, which has worked very independently and creatively and then come back to us through you, Dr. Prater. Does that sound familiar to everybody? Yeah.
Any further discussion at this time? Oh, Dr. Prater.
Yes, thank you. I, when we were putting this agenda item together, one of the comments or one of the statements there is this advisory committee will meet and submit recommendations to the board for consideration for inclusion in the board's strategic priorities. And as we discussed during our board study session, the need for a strategic session this summer. And so my hope in answering your question, Mrs. Sheffer, is that we would have some information for when the board meets this summer to discuss some of those strategic priorities. And I can envision this very easily being a part of that to address some of the urgency questions and also to really take a leading stance on some of these issues that impact us all. So with that, I look forward to putting this process together. I really look forward to making this team really impactful and positive. And then turning that around and sharing a multi-year phased plan for the board's consideration. So this is the kind of stuff I like to do. So,
thank you. Any further discussion?
One of the things we know is that when we meet with kids and you talk to them and you set direction, they're fantastic.
Yeah,
so Student Center has been one of the best things we've done as a school district, I would say. And so I see the, you know, the student impact and getting them involved in the process will be critical.
Thank you. All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor of approving the district's sustainability advisory committee, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? I would like to echo my colleagues' thanks for your coming tonight. Thank you. Thank you for participating in this important process. We really appreciate it. Thanks very much. All right. Next item on the agenda is 8.02, executive summary of proposed new secondary courses.
Catherine wants to take a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry. We've had a request for a break. You want to take a...
5 seconds.
Okay, a 5-minute break. Please make it 5 minutes. Kim's back there. Ms. McGrath, I think we're ready to get underway with your topic.
Thank you.
All right, we're moving on to item 8.02, Executive Summary of Proposed New Secondary Courses.
Thank you. Tonight I bring forward our annual proposed new courses for secondary schools. You can see those courses listed there. I will bring your attention to two in particular. One is a financial literacy course. So you'll notice that there is a proposed social science financial literacy course proposed for grade 12. This would be established as a UCCSU course. And just want you to know there's some talk and discussion about potentially having this as a required course. Of course, that's just in initial discussions. But I just wanted to plant that idea with you and for you to know that there's some real energy around our students needing financial literacy and leaving high school. And some see it as kind of an equity issue, that it helps students tremendously, and I think there's a lot of energy around that. So right now it's just a course establishment, but just want you to know there's some talk about maybe we should make this a required course. So wanted you to know that the conversation had started.
Can I make a comment about that particular course? I think you're starting about 4 years too late. And is there any thought about having some components to that course in, like, middle school or... I think it's wonderful. Starting in your senior year or teaching in the senior year, I think there's some missed opportunities there, but I do understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would like to add that I know that at Berkeley they're calling these adulting courses.
I like that title.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. This stood out to me also, and I think it's sad that its title is not exciting. But I think that what it offers is really important information for students. I'm assuming that this is like how to keep a checkbook, difference between compound interest and what's the other one called, and simple interest, and just basic life skills of finance. And so I note that it's one trimester, and that. Students will have to use an elective for it, and I wonder if there is any possibility of having it as a summer offering as well.
Interesting idea. I could check into that.
Thank you.
Are you... Were you...
Yes, so tonight I'm looking forward to for your approval for these new secondary courses, please.
Okay, Mr. Buckman?
Yes, thanks. I'm sorry I missed the beginning of this. I hope I'm not asking something you've already... addressed. So as I'm going through this, I'm noting that these don't talk about dual enrollment, and I'm wondering, at least for me, in the future or maybe in a Friday, if you can identify which ones are eligible for dual enrollment, it would really spice this up even more. And then, are all AP classes AG?
Yes.
They are. Okay. Those are my two questions.
Yeah,
the only
thing I would say about the dual enrollment part is, as you know, it depends on the individual teacher's credentials, so it may wait to depend on who is assigned to teach the course.
So you saw the little hidden, yes.
Ms. Frame? Oh, I thought you had your light on.
It was.
Oh.
Oh, it's not working? Okay. Thank you, Ms. McGrath. Let's see. With the regards to the ELD course, what is the thinking behind that, and how many students? And I'm imagining it's for both schools, because I'm wondering if these kids need this class. It's pretty kind of late in the game. And, as a side, what are the ways we can accelerate that language acquisition at the elementary sites? And then I guess my biggest concern is, can it inadvertently lead to segregation and perpetuate the forever long-term EL status. Mm-hmm. So, Jess, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are great points. So this originated from the middle school saying, what can we do to be deliberate and intentional about students that have been with us since elementary and that are long-term English language learners, even when they've still been with us? So what we know about English language learners is in order to change that, they're going to need English plus additional information in order to accelerate that achievement. So the idea is to be really targeted with a proven research-based curriculum and coaching support so that it is just based on just the long-term EL learners and intentionality around getting them to not just make a year's growth, but obviously we'll have to accelerate that. So that's the thinking. Number-wise, I think they're looking at 15-ish in a course in order to try to keep the class size small, mm-hmm. and I think Laguna was looking at 25 to 30-ish students may be eligible for that for next year.
So would they, what if they, would they be mandated to take it? I mean, and would they be given up an elective?
It would be an elective, and uh-huh. what often happens is a discussion with the student and with the family about the benefit and the desire to get the student accelerated and to be able to work to get them caught back up with a specific goal of what they're trying to accomplish. So they wouldn't necessarily force a student that was really working against it, but would highly recommend it, and I think that's usually pretty impactful.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Unger?
So I'm glad to see that a lot of these are CTE courses, but I also wanted to draw people's attention to, where is it? How about down toward the end, newspaper production leadership. And I'm so glad to see that we're presenting real news, not fake news, to people and teaching our students how to be critical thinkers and journalists.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes, thanks. On the ASB course, I've always wondered about this, and it's how does a student get into ASB? What's the limit on the number of students, and how then do we choose if there's too many students applying?
I might have to get back to you on the exact criteria, but I know that there is an application process that students interview for the process and that are selected based on the criteria set forth from each school.
Okay, so that's going to bring me to a second question. So some of us come from families and from backgrounds where interviewing is not that difficult. I often think I was interviewed every night at dinner. Some do come from backgrounds where that might not be so simple. So I'm wondering, I'll look forward to seeing the criteria mm-hmm. when you send them. Thanks.
Dr. Eisenjeth Rogers.
I'm just very excited to see STEAM Music One, where they were blending together the art and math and science. I love that. And the music production, which sounds like a job opportunity for someone down the road. And I was particularly interested, given the conversation we just had, about human geography. And I'm hoping that human geography will include some of these conversations about climate change. So, good job.
All right. I have a question. I very much appreciate how the strides we've made in making sure that our CTE courses are A through G, or fit in there somewhere. And I'm curious about, do we have any, when I look at adding some AP classes, are there any CTE classes that are AP or mm-hmm. AP that mm-hmm. are CTE mm-hmm. or where those go together? Mm-hmm. Does that happen at all?
Yes,
I didn't
so
even
we
know
do
if
have...
it was, could be a thing.
Yeah, so there's a couple ways to think about it. One is where the topic is automatically considered a career technical topic, for example, computer science. So there's AP computer science that would be within a CTE pathway and also an AP course. That's kind of the simplest form when the AP course is already within a career pathway. There is also an opportunity to have integrated courses. So what you can do is bring together, let's say, business teachers with statistics teachers,
and say, let's create a business statistics course. Oh. And then that integrated course can be set up different ways depending on the district structure. And you could say maybe it's a double period. Maybe it's one period if someone happens to have both credentials, right? There's a, you know, tricky things to look at of what kind of credit you receive, the teacher credential. Does a teacher have knowledge in both strong enough? How do you set it up? Does a student need two periods, et cetera? Lots of logistics with it. But there are some courses like that. The UC system actually kind of started and championed what they called UCCI, which was curriculum integration courses. So I actually helped facilitate some of the groups coming together where you'd have CTE teachers here with content area teachers here coming together to be able to form and implement integrated courses. Really neat model. One of my personal favorites, I'll do the little side story, is called Geometry and Construction. So it took geometry teachers, construction teachers, and said geometry can be an abstract concept for a lot of 10th graders. So how can we apply those concepts and actually build real things so that kids could see geometry, you know, come to life? So there are kind of different variations of that. The simplest form, like an AP computer science, really complex form could be the integration of two separate topics.
So I know that we've really put a focus on CTE courses being A through G, and pretty much any course that's proposed now being A through G, and I very much appreciate that. And I know it took some work and took some time for people's heads to get around that. And now that we've done that, and that's just second nature, I mean, maybe there could be an eye towards that a little bit, if and when possible, or if and when it makes sense to have CTE classes also, when we think about AP classes, if there's a way to fit in that component, I think it would be really interesting for everyone, all students who might be involved in the
I think it's an innovative idea, and I think you're right. You know, interesting to keep interest around and gathering curiosity and possibly pursuing.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Anyone else? Ms. Frame.
They're making fun of me. I just wanted to ask you, Ms. McGrath, that when you just mentioned about the geometry and construction, are there district? I saw a video of this being implemented at a school. So it was so powerful and so amazing. Mm-hmm. It was brought geometry life. And so I don't know if there are any around, but it's a great concept and a great.
Thanks. I saw it implemented at a school in Colorado. They literally would build homes, but they had a lot of space, right? They had a lot of land space, probably not a California initiative, perhaps, right, with the cost of land it took to build that, but really interesting.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Then we are seeking approval.
I'll move approval of the executive sub for the proposed new secondary courses.
I'll second. So we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by me. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Let me get back to you. Okay, 8.03, Board Priority 1, LCAP focus. Area 3, attendance, suspensions, expulsions.
Thank you. Tonight, Mr. Dowler has previously shared other information related to this. So tonight, I will look at specifically suspension, a little bit of expulsion rates. I will give kudos to Mr. Dowler for preparing this. So thank him for that. So do I have the clicker? There we go. Okay, so let's start with the state data dashboard look. So you'll remember that when we're looking at the dashboard, it's a year or so behind, right? So the most up-to-date information we can get is the overall suspension and expulsion information from 2018 to 19. So you can see that for all students, you'll note that it's ranked there in the orange category. It's showing that 2.8% were suspended at least one time. Really low percentage, an increase there of 0.3, keeping in mind that an increase in this data point is a negative, right? And the it's looking at the total number of students. So you could show there a 0.3% increase resulted in the color moving from green to orange. So a pretty drastic penalty there, but really small percentage. And you'll see how we compare for a little bit of perspective here in a minute. We're doing really well, so just kind of interesting perspective. When you look at 17-18, that we were in the green, notice it was 2.4, so 0.4, 0.3 changed there. And since it maintained at 0.2, then it stayed in the green. So pretty strict requirements there, right, and pretty drastic result. Let's look at the next one. So looking at the demographics, so keep in mind this was from students in 2018-19. That is the most up-to-date we can get when looking at state data. It indicates that each of the subgroups there, there was a slight increase in suspensions when you're looking at from 2017-18 and then moving to 18-19. Overall, still very low. However, you can see if you start with the blue in 17-18, we'll take the Hispanic group, for example. The blue was at 3.1, and then it did increase slight 0.7 to 3.8. You can see the other areas increasing, and maybe taking note of special education at 5.6, moving up to 7.6, although keep in mind that that's individualized, so it can change from year to year.
My question is, I was surprised by the percentages, but is it because the population is relatively small vis-a-vis the other subgroups?
Right, that the percentage can change more drastically when the percentages, the number of students is low.
But is that the reason we have such what I consider high percentage of special ed students being suspended? Okay, thank you. And could you give an example of why we would suspend a special ed student and what they would be doing during the suspension?
It's really going to depend at an individual level. So depending on if the student has a behavior plan, what the IEP team's plan is in working with that student, and if they're determining that it was related to their disability or not. The team and the administration is going to look specifically at that individual to determine if suspension or if another means of correction would be the best result for that student.
And so they would do a manifestation hearing regarding the behavior, and if it was a component of their disability, would they then not be suspended? Or maybe the plan altered to incorporate to address the behaviors. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we would go to a manifestation if the event that led to the suspension was significant, such that we were considering to expel the child, or if the child receives their 11th day of suspension. On their 11th day, we have the MDR. And then, like you were saying, that process does determine whether the incident was impacted by their disability or not, and that'll tell us whether we're moving forward or not. I know you also asked a question about what are they doing at home. We do provide homework. We try to provide the homework for the kids so even when they are on a suspension, they're able to move forward with the rest of their classmates.
And I have a question. Context is hard for me here because I'm curious, can you give an example of how many students is this? I mean, what is, 5.3% of, I don't understand how, that could be two students, that mm-hmm. could be, when we say it's increasing by 3.7 to 5.3, that looks like a lot, but I just don't really know what mm-hmm. that means because it has to do with the number of students, doesn't it?
Sure. When you're looking at our homeless numbers, of course that changes constantly, but you're talking about a very low number of students, right? So if you're talking about 50 students and you have 10%, you're looking at 5 students, right? So you could have 2 students change those numbers.
Right. So that's, I think that context is, to me, it's really important to understand, you know, it would be.
Would it be helpful to submit the graph back maybe in Friday notes with student numbers connected?
Because this just doesn't make good sense to me. Yeah, and I know these are suspensions and not expulsions. So, it feels. I mean, maybe I'm just not good at this, but it just feels kind of meaningless to me to not have that context of numbers.
Well, I think you can, when you think about our homeless, you're thinking about a really small relative number of students, right? When you're thinking about SED, you're talking about 40-ish, right? 35 to 40% of our population, right? So you're talking about a large group there. Where special education, right, you're talking 11-ish, 12-ish percent of our population, right? So you're right. In those groups where it is small numbers, a few students can make drastic increases.
Right, right. Okay, thank you. Just
Are some of these, dual. So for example, could somebody be special ed and homeless and be referenced in both those categories?
Sure.
Okay, so, yeah. Yeah, it's tough to figure that out. Okay, thanks.
Okay. Next one, I'll be happy to put that in Friday Focus with student numbers. Sound good? You have something you want to add?
I would just say that.
Want to do it here?
You have to. And sitting down.
The thing is that represents basically a percentage of the overall subgroup. So you're technically right that, yeah, if it's a small subgroup, like, none of those are really all that small, but homelessness would probably be the smallest subgroup out of all those demographics. It would be a relatively, you know, a couple suspensions or 10 suspensions could make a huge difference in the overall percentage.
Right.
But none of these are repeat offenders. So when you count suspension rates, you only count the number of individual students suspended, not the total number of incidents.
Okay.
So you can have one student be suspended 5 times, but only make up one student in the overall number.
Okay.
So this is a measurement of the total, like, percentage of that subgroup that was suspended. So there is a flat number associated with this, and we can make sure you get that on Friday. If that makes more sense to you.
Well, I guess what would make more sense would
be... Like if it's 500 homeless students that got suspended, or you want to see that?
Or if it's 5 out of 500. I mean, I would want to have, like, the total number and how many. Because
we can do that.
If it were the other way, it would be the same thing. It'd be like, I don't know how many homeless students there are.
Yeah. It helps with the perspective.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Keep them nearby. Great. So next is looking at why, right? So I think that goes to your question there, Mr. Millar. So while you're looking at our total number of suspensions, they have dropped since 2014-15 for violence. Increased last school year by 30%. So let's look at this more closely. So total suspensions, if you're starting with 14-15, you're looking at 627. Then in 17-18, moved way down to 281. However, in 18-19, you're looking at 327. And then you can see the division by the Y. Notice the big change in defiance.
Yeah, thank you.
And to clarify, this is total suspensions, not individual students. So it's a different way of looking at the information from the previous graph.
Thank you.
So this is total suspensions, right?
Okay.
Different than the previous. Okay. So next one, you're looking at comparative suspension rate data, okay? Okay. So SLC-USD does have a lower suspension rate. So this is the comparison one I was referring to earlier. When you look at the county, the state, every other larger school district. So let me walk you through looking at one here. So let's look at 18-19. So if you start with San Luis Coastal in the darker blue, and then you have the county, so you can see how we compare, along with California, and then looking at the other larger districts. Just helps for a little perspective.
Does it really give us perspective? Because it would only give us perspective if we were all operating on the same criteria for suspendable offenses.
Explain, what do you mean by that?
Isn't that set out in Ed Code, though?
It's like if, you know, we had a certain number of things that a student might do for which they would be suspended, and that's delineated. And Lucia Marr had those things, or some of those things, and other things that are suspendable offenses that we don't consider.
I see what you're saying. Because of our efforts with restorative justice, with working with students, having restorative circles and those kind of practices, it's likely that the percentage for us has been decreased, right? The percentage of total suspensions has decreased because of the efforts that Mr. Dowler has led along with the site administration to choose other means of correction.
So, but is it reasonable to assume that across all of these districts and the county that the same offenses are considered suspendable?
Ed Code would define what is suspendable. However, you'll find different philosophies and different ways in which each district chooses to handle different offenses.
So does this graph really give us good information, I wonder?
I think it does, because what it shows is that we have a lower suspension rate. The number of students and the percentage, when you're comparing it to the county, to the state, and to other districts, our percentage of students that are being suspended are lower compared to others.
Thank you.
So Kim, while I appreciate that, if we're going back to some of the discussion earlier by Mrs. Sheffer about, you know, what does this mean and how does it look and how do we compare to, while I appreciate that we're comparing ourselves to districts within the county, it always occurs to me that it would be more interesting or at least a viable thing to compare us to a similar school district. And so I just want to throw that out. Does this data come from DataQuest or some existing source? We're not creating this in-house.
Correct.
Okay. And so that if that's true, would it be that difficult to find the data for a district of similar demographics?
We have, for example, compared ourselves to maybe South San Francisco Unified has been one that has some similar demographics, and so we could pull the suspension rate from that school district if that's helpful.
Okay. Thanks.
I don't know that it...
I didn't ask it to be done. I just asked whether it was possible. Thanks.
Mr. Unger?
So I'm curious, and I'm not asking for this information, but do we look at not only the number of the gross number of suspensions, but do we also look at how long we're suspending students for? Is there any consideration of that? Because that seems to me to be a pretty important thing as we look at whether our discipline, you know, whether restorative justice and things like that are working. You know, we're typically would we suspend a kid for 5 days, as you know, for a drug offense, for example. That seems to be kind of what we do, versus 1 day for something else or 3 days for, you know, getting in a fight. So are those important figures? And they're not going to be helpful to me right now. I'm just curious if we look at that sort of thing too.
Mm-hmm. In general, I can say if Mr. Dowler wants to add more specifics, but in general, the site administrators have really done a great job working with Mr. Dowler on let's talk about what's a reasonable amount of time and trying to minimize the amount of time that a student's away, but yet feel like that there was consistency and fairness in that. So any other details to add there with that?
Yeah, we've looked at total number of days suspended. So we always look at a total number of days suspended and total number of suspensions. And, you know, you want to look at those two numbers just to see what your impact is from year to year and in comparison from year to year. So, you know, if we were a revenue limit district, the day's number, day suspension of suspended would be a lot more important. But right now we're using it as just as a measurement to compare whether or not our implementation of other means of correction are being effective in addressing these issues, in addition to the utilization of suspension. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Great, so let's look at our final steps. There's many things to celebrate here. So suspension rates are lower than the county, than the state, and every other large district within our county. San Luis Coastal's increase is not due to an increase of the use of K, right? So that's the defiance one that you were talking about, Mr. Millar. Student campus safety is also a top priority, right? And a lot of work has been done around that. And Mr. Deller, along with site administrators and teachers, have really, you know, grabbed hold of how can we work to make sure that we're teaching students, you know, better behavior choices and how to help change that decision for the future. So next steps, Mr. Deller always goes over this information with site administrators. They look at analyzing the data at a much more specific level. They kind of discuss implications and look at it site by site in order to see what patterns are emerging and what can be done for positive next steps. Any further questions?
Is there anyone from the public wishing to address the board on this? Any further discussion by the board? All right. Thank you. And thank you, Ms. Frost and Mr. Dowler. Thanks. Oh, and I, Mr. Dowler, before you leave, I would like to, you don't have to come to the microphone. I just remembered something I wanted to
say. You're helping me get my steps in tonight. Thank you.
That's good. That's good. You go back and forth a few more times.
Right, a few more times.
I really want to express my appreciation to you for your efforts, because I know that your efforts have been a huge factor in decreasing these numbers. So
thank you
very much.
I think you've
instituted some great processes for kids, and I know that you take this really seriously and that these are the kids you like working with.
Yeah,
so
thank you.
That's
Absolutely.
Great. It's
Appreciate
good for
it.
Them. It's good for us. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, Chris, how about the Astros? Oh, my God.
Okay. All right, next 8.04, Measure D.
Yeah, so as I outlined at the study session with the board, we kind of have this optimal period to complete the office modernization at Bishop's Peak Elementary School. So, of course, the multipurpose room is done. They're currently taking the old multipurpose room, turning it into the office. And so Rick Stimson, our project manager, who's always on top of things, looked at it, has been talking with Manum Construction, and after meeting with their reps, has determined it now is the time for us to finish the library portion as well. So it's going to be much more cost efficient, much better for us to do it at this time, and that's, you know, long term, it's also going to make the two sides match. So it basically looking at stuccoing the rest of the building, painting the windows, doors, as well as doing a roof project to complete that side of the building as well. So I'm bringing this forward to the board tonight to increase that GMP for the Bishop's Peak for that portion. And it looks like he will be able to, Manual Construction will be able to complete that work by the end of this school year.
Mr. Millar.
I'd just like to hear from Mr. Holcomb. He's been so patient. You okay with this, Mr. Holcomb?
Lights.
Yeah, you need to walk over to the podium.
Yes, I am.
Thank you, Ron.
Fundamentally.
Thank you very much.
When you look at the campus, you know, it's like a great smile with one bad tooth. It's
oh,
like,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
time to fix it.
Okay, fix the tooth. Thank you.
Ms. Roger.
I guess I called Mr. Holcomb about this agenda item earlier today, so I know that he is supportive of it. And if there's no further discussion, then I'll move approval.
We have a motion by Mrs. Roger, a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
So the other thing we talked about at our board study session was the needs in the school district. So, you know, as we're reviewing the current budget, With all of our work that we're doing with Measure D and comprehensive high schools, as well as other projects around the district, you know, we know we have a huge, still long list of items, deferred maintenance, as well as safety features at all of our school sites. So in order to even think about moving forward with the potential next general obligation bond, one of the things we have to do is do a survey, do our due diligence to go out to the community, talk to them about their interest in what things they would support. And so this is something we did prior to the 2014 Measure D bond measure. So if you'll remember, Mr. Isom, survey team went out, surveyed the community, right? And we try to get that. It's definitely something where they're looking for, you know, it's an anonymous impact, all the different areas, looking for different age groups, right? Looking for different, you know, just all the different factors in terms of a voting body, and really trying to see if and when and how much the community would be willing to support potentially moving forward in the future with another bond measure. We know, again, the safety needs are going to come greatly in terms of this. And so what we have in front of you tonight is for the board to potentially approve the survey so that the board can have the information it needs to decide, is this something that we should move forward with?
Mr. Millar, then Mrs. Roger.
So,
oh, I'm sorry.
Do we know when this survey would actually be conducted?
It would be conducted in March.
Next month?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I got to tell you, with Prop 13 on the ballot and all the hoopla about that, I just worry about getting some distorted responses, and it's probably going to be distorted to the negative side. And since we're not going to take action on the actual bond, whether or not to float it, I assume until sometime.
I'll talk to, yeah, later. I mean, I can talk to Mr. Isom and see, talk to him about that specifically, about the, you know, the measure.
And my concern is maybe misplaced.
Maybe end of March, beginning of April, but he would probably, I mean, I would hope that he would have that.
Well, I'm kind of more concerned about the overall political environment leading up to the general election with the propositions on the ballot and just the general sort of feel. And I'm no political guru, even though I have been elected to the school board. Uh-huh. That's a different question. So that's my concern. And if you could, you know, I just want to make sure that
absolutely
we get some good results. And,
for sure.
You know, okay. And I don't know if anybody else shares those concerns.
Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, I share those concerns 100%. Mm-hmm. We're seeing, first of all, I want to thank the public for the last bond. I mean, over
absolutely
70% approval rating.
Yeah.
And look what we've done, and I think the Citizens Oversight and you and Mr. Mm-hmm. Holcomb have done a great job. So I think we're spending that money really wisely.
Absolutely.
However, I think I agree wholeheartedly with Mr. Millar. There's a tax on public education going on. There's the Prop 13 confusion. There's going to be a lot of state bonds. I think I have to agree. My feeling is there's going to be a lot of confusion out there, and we may just get swept up in it. So just
maybe
a few cents.
Ms. Frame? Oh, I'm sorry.
Ms. Roger.
Ms. Roger, this time your light is on purpose?
Yes, it is.
Okay, sorry.
I share the concerns of my colleagues, and I note that this agenda item contemplates the November 2020 ballot.
Mm-hmm.
So,
presidential election, large turnout, favors a measure like this.
Got it. There, and as has been expressed, there mm-hmm. are some things that might work adversely. But I think that one of the things that if we did go out for a bond, it would be in large part because we are getting the information back from our safety studies.
Absolutely.
And that it is going to be very costly to implement
mm-hmm.
The school safety items that will come as a result of those studies. And so I'm wondering, when do we expect that we'll get that information from our school safety people? I can't think of their name.
So
right
we actually
now
have a study session
Resolute
set up for April, Resolute Group, for them to share that information with the board.
for April.
At our April study session to go through those site surveys, those types of things. They're done. I have the information.
So ISIM and Associates would be going out in advance of knowing a dollar amount.
Yeah. So, again, the purpose of the survey is to find out from the general public, what are you willing to support? Is it roofs? Is it safety? Is it what and how much are you willing to support? Is it $5? Is it $10? Is it $49? So those are all, you know, kind of what the survey does. Is it measures people's kind of opinions of us doing this potentially in November and putting a measure on the ballot. So that's what, you know, that's what they do. It's what they do for a living. It's, you know, they do it all across the state of California. We're seeing many more local bond measures that are coming forward throughout the state because it is the, you know, the main way that school districts are able to pay for their maintenance and, you know, safety measures, those types of things in terms of construction. So that would come out of it. The hope would be that the board would, you know, hear that information. I mean, I can already, like I've shared before, even at the study sessions, we know I have 10 schools right now that need new fire alarms at $250,000 to $350,000 apiece. I mean, there's just certain things we just know already ongoing. So at the next board meeting, you're going to see one for Los Osos Middle School, which is out to bid right now. So there are big ticket items that we definitely need to take care of. And I think the survey will give the board an idea of, is there support out there or not? Is it something we should wait and hold off and work more with the public and educate them and move forward? But it's definitely something that I believe we should move forward on.
I just wish that we could present more information when doing the survey about the safety components, you know, of what we need to do. Because as a property owner and a voter, I personally would be much more inclined to say, yes, yeah, I will support enhancing safety because that children need to be safe, rather than not really understanding what the bond might be about. Mm-hmm. And if it's about embellishments, well, I'm already kind of tapped out. So I just wish that could be more prominent in the survey materials.
Well, should the board approve this tonight, Dr. Prater and myself will be working on what the survey is and questions that would be put forward to the public. I can actually, in Friday notes, I can share the last survey that was done before, so you get kind of a general idea of how that, you know, the types of questions, how they answer them, ask them, I should say, and how that moved forward, you know, for the last bond measure. This one a little different, right, in terms of where we're at as a school district and our needs currently with our focus on safety, with, you know, looking at kind of now that the comprehensive high schools are kind of taken care of, looking at our middle schools and elementary schools to kind of bring them up to the same standard. So there will be questions embedded when they do the public opinion poll that will talk about different things, everything from roofs to fencing to new locks on doors to, you know, and they try to find out what people, what is the aptitude, what resonates with people, right, in terms of it. And then that helps us to move forward with, okay, well, what are we going to ask the public to do? And that's how you write your bond statement, right, what we focused on. So we knew the two comprehensive high schools resonated last time, largely with our communities, and that's why it was our focus for the Measure D. And so I think we'll do something like that, I would say. But until we kind of talk and find out from the community what are their priorities, what are the things they would like to see at our schools, then we can kind of, you know, work on that focus and what it should be.
Thank you.
Ms. Frame?
Yes, Mr. Pinkerton. I was wondering, and you'll have to educate me on this. Is there, before this, and I apologize for sending my question later, would a preliminary step could use the use of Parent Square and ask our parents, who would be our most ardent supporters, to get a snapshot of, is, you know, would they support a bond of safety? I know it's not part of the process, but.
So we could do that, and I think what you'll find is you get a lot of support that way.
Right.
But those aren't necessarily the people we want to know from or hear from.
No, I know.
So that's why this goes, out to all the different demographic groups, age groups. They look at the former past elections, right, to see how people voted, who they are, the Republican, Democrat. I mean, they do all those things as part of the survey to get a really good feeling for what is the support, right? And then Mr. Eisen would come back to the board with those results, explain them to you, and let you know his thoughts, right, who's done this thousands of times across the state of California, on whether or not, you know, is this something we should be forward with? Do we need to do more public communication, interaction with them prior to bringing this forward? So he would help us kind of with that long-term plan and when we should move forward.
Okay, thank you.
We've kind of held off until this point just because it's not an easy decision to make, right, in terms of it. You know, Dr. Prater and I have talked a lot about it over the years. I know that there's several other districts in our county that are also looking at putting other bond measures. We currently have the lowest taxpayer cost in the county right now compared to other districts, you know, of our like size. And so it's never easy to do, but it's something that we should at least inquire about and see if there's support or not.
Mr. Unger?
Yeah, I'm going to support this, and I want to point out that even with Prop 13 going on the ballot, assuming Prop 13 does win, I doubt very seriously if we're going to see any money from that. I think that you had said at one point we have about $700 million worth of unfunded projects. You know, I think we're taking care of about $200 million worth of those right now. But
yes.
So that still leaves us $500 million worth of projects that we need to be considering for the safety of our students and the maintenance that we need to provide on our schools. So I think those are important things. I think it's going to be important for us to look at what the level of community support for a bond would be.
Absolutely.
And I go back to, I think it was, when was it, Walter, 2001, when we thought about floating a parcel tax, and I think it was $60. Was it $60?
Yeah.
We couldn't get 50. We couldn't get 60. We barely got 50% of the
people.
And we
had a higher threshold in both
cases. Yeah, and it was a higher threshold. So we can't know unless we do this, and so that's why I'm going to support it.
Agreed.
Mr. Millar?
Well, the agreement actually tracks a survey of voters, which is kind of a different cat.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third paragraph, 3 at the top, they talk about testing specific project supports. So I assume there would be a discussion, for instance, these are security measures the district needs to take, these are roof repairs and stuff. And my previous concern is no doubt a manifestation of my overall paranoia about the upcoming election.
Agreed.
And not for my position, for those at home. But just nationally. So so I kind of think Chris is right in his, you don't know until you ask. And but if we get a negative response, Mark and I told you so.
Do we know?
Right, Mark?
So, go ahead. I have a couple of questions. How, before our last... Before we did this last time, when did we do the survey? When did ISOM do it? Like, how much lead time did we have?
I think it was about
the
same.
Was it about the same?
Mm-hmm.
I guess just because of the national election this particular year, it just feels, it all feels so close, but it's really not.
Well, normally we don't vote in March. I mean, we have an much earlier primary than we've faced in the past, right?
Right.
So that part's different. It is confusing. This current Prop 13 ballot state bond is a confusing thing for the public, right? So I've had tons of questions about it, talking to the men's group today about it, you know, the whole taxes versus bond, state bond part of it. So in talking to John, it may be best to wait till after primary day to kind of move forward and talk about it, but I'll definitely address that.
One other question I have, and I don't know whether it would have any bearing on this or not, is that, you know, Governor Newsom hasn't made a State of the State address yet. And I don't know whether he's going, and it's late for, you know, he's late doing it, but I don't know, I'm curious as to whether he'd be, I assume, I know he would do it prior to, you know, to the, or I would hope so, prior to any survey going out, but I'm just curious about what he may have to say about education in that, but it's just a thought. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. So if we were to do, I'm trying to think of a way that we could just delay this long enough so that the concerns that have been raised here could maybe get answered specifically by Mr. Isom. So when, like, could we do this at the next study session, which I'm not sure when that is, and it, does that give us the time frame that you're looking for? So if you could go to Mr. Isom and say, hey, you know, this is what came up, presidential year, all of that, and then get his expert opinion, mm-hmm. and then we could actually vote on this at whatever the next opportunity.
I would prefer that you vote on it now. And that we move forward aspect of it, and then utilize him for when to give the survey, use his advice. So if it's voted today, I'm not, just because you vote on it today doesn't mean tomorrow we're going to do the survey and it's getting done. In fact, I have next week I have a meeting with him just to discuss the questions about this.
I appreciate that answer. And I'm sorry, I thought I heard March this year. So I thought we were kind of locking into March.
No, I see. Potentially doing the survey in March.
Right.
Which could be after the primary, which could be later. So, okay. Again, that was the initial thought, but because of the board's concerns,
okay.
I'll address that with Mr. Isom. And if he says we're better off to do it in April and May, I'll listen to him. And, again, this is what he does for a living. This is his, you know, kind of expertise.
And also I would just note that apparently Governor Newsom will be giving a State of the State address tomorrow at 10 a.m. Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I'm looking at Mr. Isom's proposal. I see that it's good 30 days, but it's not dated.
It's because we haven't.
And I'm not the director of fiscal services either.
Well, it has. Wouldn't that mean that we have to accept it within 30 days from the date that it was presented to us?
There's a few changes that need to happen in terms of we'll fix the contracts.
Turn down the
okay, so you would like
but
us
the general
to
census is to do the survey. I have Isom Associates to do the survey.
I think the board's
for
pretty much indicated that they are in favor of doing the survey. We just have some questions about timing. Mm-hmm. So if we were to approve it today, then you would have it in your pocket.
Yep.
But still,
I'll be speaking with Mr. Isom tomorrow about your concerns.
About our concerns.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Well, if there's no one else, then
Mr. Millar.
So I think Mark's point is well taken. Is it possible after this conversation with Mr. Isom tomorrow that you provide some feedback to, I'm pretty sure you're going to provide
absolutely
feedback to the superintendent.
Friday notes. Yep.
Maybe in Friday notes.
Absolutely.
If you can feel him out on the Prop 13 thing we're kind of worried about.
Absolutely.
And this is going to be a construction bond that we're talking about, right?
This is a general obligation bond.
Oh, okay. All right. Is that different than Measure D?
No, same.
All right, I'm just concerned, you know, that in some mm-hmm. portions of the public, they're going to go, hey, we just did 171
million. Absolutely.
What do you guys, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So, yeah, I can, with that, with providing us whatever feedback you can get, I support doing this.
So, well, I have one more question, if I knew it until. So this is a sort of multi-step prospect here. He will do the survey. The mm-hmm. board will see the results of the
absolutely
survey and at that time make another determination whether the board wishes to proceed further.
Yes.
I just need that clarity.
Absolutely.
All right. Is there anyone from the public here to address this?
Sorry.
All right. Seeing Mr. Millar.
I move we approve the Isom survey proposal.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Ms. Frame. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Item 8.06 is complete the CSBA Delegate Assembly ballot.
Yes, I am seeking your approval of the CSBA Delegate Assembly for Region 9C. The ballot will move, as you recall, you nominated Mr. Buckman for this particular role, and now this ballot is the official action step that you would take to recognize him as our representative for Regions 9C for the CSBA Delegate Assembly.
I just wanted to quickly state that it's my understanding as we move forward with this, I just wanted to point out that thanks to Mr. Unger's service to CSBA in the past and serving as board as CSBA president, that you are delegate for life. Is that true?
As long as I'm on the school board, yes. As long as I'm an elected official.
Correct. Oh, I see. Okay. Yes. Well, thank you for your continuing and ongoing service, because I was not aware of that. So,
yeah, it also gets me a free registration at the AEC.
Well, thank you for that also. Okay. Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. We made our nomination, and I have no quarrel whatsoever with it, but it just occurs to me that over the years, as many times as we've done this, I have never asked the question, what does a CSBA delegate do?
How much time do you have, Meryl?
Well, may I have the short course? Because
yeah, very short. Short. Very
Ben
short.
Winkle just woke up. And
I have energy bars. So as Chris can attest, the delegates speak for the local school boards, and so they bring similar actions that this board does to the staff, so that they set the policies for the lobbying that CSB does successfully most of the time on our behalf. They create task force. Chris has sat on the special ed task force. I'll be sitting on the climate task force. It becomes the voice of all of us at the state level. Aside from that, there's just this wealth of other things that go on within CSBA. And I'm proud to have done this for you since probably my second term, which maybe was 16 years ago.
So you are representing us.
I am representing Region 9. So Lucia Marr, us, everybody in our county.
In our county.
And most of, I think the other districts that have looked at this have already said yes. So.
Okay. Well, I have
I think no, I'm running unopposed, actually.
I have no quarrel with it, so unless someone else has a comment.
I was just going to say I think there are three or four things that the Delegate Assembly is really responsible for. They're responsible for the policies of CSBA, which drive the legislative agenda. They're responsible for electing the officers. They're responsible for approving the bylaws. And then they provide, they are responsible for approving legislative, for approving statewide ballot initiative support or no support. And then they provide feedback to CSBA. So those are some of the things that the Delegate Assembly does.
And in following in Mr. Unger's footsteps, so I'm just recently served on the Policy Platform Committee, which is huge. And I thought it was huge, and it was very honored. And now I've been placed on the nominating committee. So it's just following in Chris's footsteps.
Okay. Well, then now I have a better understanding of what you'll be doing, and I'll move approval of your nomination.
Okay, we have a motion by Mrs. Rogers, a second by Dr. Eisendrath. Rogers, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Okay.
I will. Who did that?
Do you have Alexa on there?
No, I don't have Alexa.
That's so weird.
So I.
Mr. Buckman abstained.
Thank you.
So, and then I would like to note, please, that I will not be going to the public any longer because there is a sea of empty chairs out there. So 8.07, approve.
I'm sorry, I'm being an idiot.
8.07, approve board member pay for permissible absence.
Yes, I'd like to seek your permission for to allow for Mr. Unger's February 4th absence to be approved for his work with NSBA and advocacy.
I will make a motion to approve that.
I have a question.
Mr. Millar.
You're not double-dipping, are you?
Nope.
Okay, just wanted to clarify that for the public, nope. And I'll second.
Nope. NSBA, yeah. NSBA, it is a voluntary job, and I am only paid for actual expenses that come out of my pocket.
Okay, there's a motion by me, a second by Mr. Millar. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Mr. Unger is abstaining. 8.08, proposed revisions to board policy 5117, inter-district attendance.
Thanks. Tonight I bring forward board policy 5117. As you know, it's gone through our procedures of district staff reviewing it, bringing that to me bringing this to the board subcommittee. You will remember that this was brought previously. We did go ahead and bring it back for first reading because there were enough comments and suggestions to bring it back to the subcommittee. So you will see there the red additions are from Gamut, suggestions with the purple cross-offs being from the board subcommittee there of things to reduce from it, and often being that specifics are moved and suggested for the AR.
You want to...
Any discussion? Sorry.
Yes.
And me too.
We all do. Okay.
Mrs. Roger, stronger than
it would
Mr.
appear that maybe I have something different than... Mrs. Sheffer has, but in paragraph 2, this reads, for each approved interdistrict request, the district shall enter into an agreement with the other involved school district as authorized by law. And then our committee decided to strike the Ed Code section, which specifies that the agreement is valid for 1 year only, and that the parent or guardian of the student must reapply each year for interdistrict attendance. That has been stricken. So then that's followed by parents or guardians requesting interdistrict attendance for their students shall be informed of this requirement and apprised of the fact that the request may not be renewed in future years. So that is no longer applicable if the 1 year validity is stricken.
Kim, this doesn't seem like the
this
one we...
This isn't what I read over the weekend.
Yeah.
Interesting. You think something is different than what was there before? Is that what you're saying?
Does anybody else have what I have?
Yeah, I thought we put in transportation and I...
Transportation is in there.
But there was a longer statement, I thought, yep. In the one we saw this...
I don't know. I just know that if it's not annual renewable, then we're not, there is no need to notify the parents or guardians of that. So that should be stricken as well.
I'll take your note about that sentence, but then let me just double check and make sure that something didn't get moved.
Okay, I guess my question then might be, are parents required to annually reapply for interdistrict placement?
We typically approve at 1 year only, and I think the specificity of that is reasonable for an AR. And so I think that was part of the idea of not the embedded Ed Code reference, that could be moved.
Then we just don't want to strike that Ed Code reference if that is our practice.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to just bring it back? Yeah. I see some confused faces. Let me just make sure that it was attached correctly, and maybe there was something.
Well, let me still. We still have lights on, so I have. Chris has done. Mr. Millar. No, we still have lights on. Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I just want to get the nature of the agreement that we enter into with the district. From whom we're receiving this uncompensated student. So is it going to be like a Coast Union kind of agreement where...
No, this is different. It's just our current practice of if we have a transfer request, let's say from a student that lives in Atascadero Unified School District boundaries, and they're applying for that to be for us to
be accepted, for the student to be accepted into our school district, and then we enter into that agreement. The student starts there and gets released from their home district, and they request that we allow that attendance, and then that's reviewed, and if so, then the agreement's made.
Okay.
Mr.
Buckman? That's kind of what I'm getting at.
There's no compensation for it.
So the Coast Union and the Cayucas was kind of an anomaly.
Is a unique situation.
Because of the numbers and also the geographic.
Because it's rare. It's rare, right? Okay. The circumstances have to be unusual for us to accept a student that doesn't live within our home boundary.
Good. If I can, Walter, I'd just point out that this is also to allow our students, if they, for some reason they want to go somewhere else, and so that it's a two-way. Thanks.
I will bring that back.
Okay.
Great. So let's look at the next one. We have a board bylaw, 9322. This is the one that you did ask to come back. We did go ahead and list it again as a first reading just to make sure that the public had the opportunity to review it. You can see there with the additions noted. If you scroll down a little, the website edition was noted there in purple. So this could be considered a first reading, or this was brought last time as a first reading, so I would say it was up to you to either bring it back for a second reading or consider this the second reading and approve tonight.
So do you want to bring up your questions?
Yeah, I have a question about, it's at the bottom of page one, where it says any board member or a member of the public may request that a matter within the jurisdiction of the board be placed on the agenda of a regular meeting. The request shall be submitted in writing to the superintendent or designee with supporting documents and information, if any, at least 1 week before the scheduled meeting date. Items submitted less than a week before the scheduled meeting date may be postponed to a later meeting in order to allow sufficient time for consideration and research, blah, blah. I have a concern that an agenda item submitted a week before a meeting doesn't give staff enough time. They can't drop everything they're doing and do the research for an agenda item that quickly. When we look at our board meetings, we look 3 meetings out, and the agendas are, for the most part, completed. So I see that as problematic for agenda construction and for the staff's ability to do the work that may be required of them for a requested agenda item.
Mr. Buckman and Mr. Millar.
Yep. Sorry I didn't bring this up earlier, but thank you, Marilyn, because in my understanding, the superintendent, the board, do not have to place it on the immediate following. There's ed code that says you have, am I incorrect?
Yeah, there's discretion within a reasonable time frame,
yeah.
But with the discretion of the superintendent and
right.
The governing board.
So then I guess Marilyn's question, and I'm sure she's going to raise it right now, but is why should we not reflect that in our board policy?
Yeah, at least 1 week before the scheduled meeting is, I don't see that as possible.
Mr. Millar?
So are we changing our approach to board members placing things on the agenda? Now all we have to do is put it in writing, send it to the superintendent? Oh, we have to by law. Okay, well, the law.
I would note that doesn't guarantee that it gets on the agenda. It still goes to the superintendent to make that decision. And then I think that my guess would be the superintendent might take it to his president and clerk. So I appreciate that, Walter, but it doesn't, there's no guarantee that anything's going to show up if it does, superintendent doesn't think it's applicable.
Okay. Well, I like the old system better.
Ms. Roger, do you have a suggestion of the time frame?
Yeah, I just wondered if this language then could be changed to reflect that we're not going to entertain items for the next meeting. Somehow, I don't know what the verbiage would be, but we have to clean this up because it's just not feasible to do it within 1 week before the scheduled meeting.
So do we say 2 to 3 weeks? Do we say at the superintendent's discretion? Do we say it says to determine if an item would be placed on a future agenda?
Yeah, I would use saying it, to be placed on a future agenda and or something to the effect of at the discretion of the board, of the superintendent and board president and clerk or something like that. And, I also wanted to make, and I'll get to you, one other note that was brought to my attention actually by Mrs. Roger earlier today, that it is our practice in our district that where we state the board president and superintendent, it's our practice that it's the board president, clerk, and superintendent do the agenda planning together, and we might want to consider having that language in the policy. It's not. There are a couple of places. I'm saying board president, clerk, and superintendent.
That's supposed
to separate. Because just to reflect our longstanding practice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mr. Unger.
So to Walter's point, does this preclude the process that we have for putting advanced agenda items on our agendas right now? So it does.
Yes, because we can't. Mrs. Sheffield, maybe you could speak to it by law.
Well, our advance agenda process is rather than coming to that we had talked about at one time of presenting it and then coming back. Mm-hmm. We can't. We need to have it presented and then the president, clerk, and superintendent will determine at the if we don't decide it can be in Friday Focus or another way to address the topic, then it's then taken to the superintendent, president, and clerk to discuss at PLRC as to when that might appear on an agenda and what it would look like.
So in other words, just I want to be clear about this. So for advanced agenda items, the way this is written, if a board member brings an advanced agenda item up, we can choose to Friday notes or some other way of resolving it. If it is suggested that it become an agenda item, then rather than the board itself agreeing on whether to bring this forward, it then goes to the new processes. It then goes to the board president and clerk and superintendent to decide whether it's relevant to the topics that are within the purview of the school district.
Yes, and that is something I learned in the legal day at CSBA this year.
Okay.
Was that this is how we're supposed to be doing it? Yes.
Well, what did you say, Walter? It's the law.
Okay. It should be. I'll look at my legal day handouts from CSBA because that's where I kind of learned that the way we're doing it, or that we had kind of come up with doing it was.
I don't know where I interpreted this to say that a proposed agenda item does not come to the board, but rather goes to the superintendent. Here, any board member or member of the public may request that a matter within the jurisdiction of the board be placed on the agenda of a regular meeting. The request shall be submitted in writing to the superintendent or designee. So it bypasses the board entirely. It goes straight to the superintendent. I don't think that's our intent, is it?
Well, Dr. Prater, and then.
So what's making this really confusing is just about 2-3 months ago, Mike Smith, Josh Whiteside actually, put together the Advanced Agenda Protocol. And in that Advanced Agenda Protocol, it clearly states that, you know, we go through this, it lays out the process of advanced agenda requests, and then when it comes at the discretion lies in the actual policy that board agendas are created by the superintendent and the board president and clerk. So the three of us sit each week and we develop these agenda items, and it gives discretion to decide whether that is agendized at a board meeting, whether it can be done through Friday notes in another way. Of course, we circle back and explain, well, is this acceptable? And that's what we've been doing, and it works out really well. What Josh did say to me, however, was that the law does say that any board member has the right to request an agenda item as long as it's within the purview of board business. And that's where our policy and the law can collide. So what I think is nice about our system is that it does always come back to the board president and the clerk with the superintendent, always, no matter what, when we build agendas. So I think that's a safeguard. It does, in fact, come to the board.
So basically what you're saying is that any board member has the same rights as any member of the public.
That's exactly what Josh Whiteside told me. What could happen, and how another way it was sort of explained, was that because any board we all have the same rights as members of the public, if I felt an issue that I really wanted to have as an agenda topic wasn't being addressed, I could stand up from this table and go to that podium and say, I am now speaking as a member of the public, not as a trustee, and I want this on an agenda. So as long as it falls within the purview of the school board and fits within the criteria of school district business, then that's how agenda topics can come forward. So, Mr. Millar?
So the only criteria is being within the purview of the board's duties?
The district's.
What about cost-benefit analysis? What about wasted time analysis? What if we really need to take up board time discussing something just because it's in the purview? Is that what you guys make the determination about? Because it's already 9:15, I want to go home, and I'm afraid if we make this really wide open, put whatever you want on the agenda, as long as it's within the purview of the board, that we could have longer agendas.
But Josh's point to that, to avoid that, is that's why board governance and bylaws and best practices would prevent that from occurring, because we would recognize that some of these items don't necessarily belong as an agenda item in a board meeting, but rather it can be resolved in other ways. So that's sort of the reliance on the governance team and the best practices, which is why this board bylaw, I think, is important, especially as we go to trustee area elections, because then it could become a real issue if the practice of the board isn't to sort of manage that.
And to be a cohesive unit as a board. Mrs. Roger.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize my...
Okay.
So to summarize, I see that we need the addition of the clerk, right, in the preparation of the agenda.
Yes,
and then are we saying in the next paragraph that we would remove the times and instead say, in order to determine if the item would be placed on a future agenda?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you for your direction.
Does that make sense to everyone? Does that accurately reflect the discussion, Mr. Buckman?
I think it's great. I'm just wondering whether it needs to have the word reasonable to meet the definition. So within a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but the lawyers know.
I don't have a problem with that. Okay. So it seems that this should come back again for a second reading, but with those changes, and that
you bet.
We should be okay.
You bet. Happy to.
Okay. Next is our, thank you, Kim. Next is our action consent agenda. Please let me know if you want anything pulled. 9.01, sorry, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.02, approval of furniture and equipment request. 9.03, proposed revisions to board policy 5121, grades, evaluation of student achievement, second reading. 9.04, proposed revisions to board policy 5127, graduation ceremonies and activities, second reading. So nothing was pulled. A motion, please.
I'll move approval of items 9.01 through 9.04.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Rogers, second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Moving on to advance agenda. Anything? Okay. Reports by, how's that? Well, we'll just do it really fast. Reports by board members. Anything, Mr. Unger?
I'll try to make it really fast. So this Friday, I'm going to be presenting at the California Personnel Commissioners Association meeting on two topics. First is current issues in education for personnel commissioners, and then second are what about relationships between board members and between trustees and personnel commissioners? And I really wanted to thank Beth Summers from our HR office, who spent a lot of time with me. She was really helpful. Tomorrow I'm going off to Morro Bay High School because one of the things they're doing there is that they have a clothing closet. And it's really supervised by Julie McAdon's class, and Julie has a class of special needs students, and I'm really excited to go see that. And then thank you all for approving my absence. I did get a chance to talk to members of congressional staff members, Senate staff members. We're talking about full funding for special education, increases in early childhood special education. We're really talking about the E-rate, too, which really helps us out. And then I'm going to miss the next two meetings. I'm going to be out of the country. So thank you.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes, thanks. Skipping other things, I just wanted to thank staff for putting together the community workshop on equity. And I know some of my fellow board members were there. I think Catherine was there. And Evelyn. It was just phenomenal. And the outreach to the community and getting that message out and trying to educate the community, it was phenomenal. I think there are at least 50 people there. I'm not sure. But it was great. I just want to thank staff for putting that together.
Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers.
Yes, I would just like to congratulate Del Mar Elementary School students and teachers and Principal Janet Gould. I was delighted to be able to celebrate with them their back-to-back recognition as a state distinguished school. And they were lovely. And many of the teachers who could only come down for, it was in Anaheim, so a group of teachers who could only come down for the day drove all the way down and celebrated with everyone and went back to school and ran their classrooms. But it was it really was an indication of just how extraordinary that school is. It's a very diverse group of students, and year after year they just keep knocking out of the park. I understand they're going for a three-peat next year, so fingers crossed for that.
And thank you for attending. Thanks. All right. Looks like that's it. Thank you, everyone. We will see you next time.